gentlemen, welcome to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this, Tuesday afternoon, the 23rd of June, 2026. We got a big show for you today. We're going to be talking, of course, about a lot of breaking news, the latest with the Iran negotiations, as well as some drama going on with old Dr. Anthony Fauci. And as we cruise on the cutting edge, the razor's edge of today's news, we also need to go back in time, remind ourselves of how the hell we got here. This is a fantastic compilation by Maze at Maze Moore on X. A little reminder of the insanity that beset us during the COVID era. Let's watch.
President Trump wrote on Twitter, "Don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life." Don't let it dominate your life?
In terms of responding to a comment like that, it's gross.
It's okay to be afraid of COVID, and it's okay that it's dominating your life.
Everyone should be afraid of COVID.
You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free.
I can't come in, Mom. It's because of this flu thing.
We won't be free of this pandemic until we listen to the acknowledged truth. Listen to the scientists.
Science is truth.
You know, science is truth.
What is the impact to public health when people are openly questioning the science?
Now is the time to do what you're told.
By not hearing the truth, by not listening to the scientists, they are prolonging how bad the economy will be.
When I see somebody out in the world who's not wearing a mask, I instantly think, you are a threat, or you are selfish, or you are a COVID denier, and you definitely haven't been vaccinated.
See, don't wear a mask, get the fuck out.
What does this have? Are you vaccinated?
I am triple vaccinated.
So why are you wearing a mask?
Seek out the scientists and listen to their advice.
Listen to scientists.
Listen to the scientists.
Trust the experts.
We're going to trust science. We're going to trust the experts.
Parents who say, well, I need to do my own research, makes you think of that cartoon I saw of the tombstone that said, I did my own research.
Republicans have given their voters license to believe whatever they want to believe.
Heard somebody saying, listen to the scientists. Do that.
Let's listen to the scientists.
That phrase, do your own research, it's popping up a lot in conversations about coronavirus and about COVID vaccines. Doing your own research, it seems so innocent, but it can have serious consequences. Renee, what are the roots of this phrase? I feel like I used to hear it around QAnon craziness.
Come on!
Tase somebody over a mask. Tasing this lady over not wearing a damn mask.
If some jerk exposed my mother to COVID because they didn't want to wear a mask, I would want to kill them.
We can watch the experts, but we shouldn't be listening to Trump, a non-medical professional.
Well, the answer is listen to Bill Gates. Bill's right about a lot of things, and he's at the steep learning curve in global health.
And we're really seeing just how important it is to follow science.
Yes, yes, exactly, and we need to listen to scientists.
The idea that people are questioning the science behind the vaccine.
The science checks out. Even if you don't believe in the science, you think you're tough enough and you're healthy enough and you're young enough, the scientists were right all along. Eventually, the science catches up with you.
Are we doing more harm than good by questioning the science behind J&J?
Trust that vaccine.
Trust the experts.
Listen to the medical experts.
Trust the experts.
If you don't understand the science, you don't know what you're fighting.
Just let the experts speak.
So maybe you should just shut up right now.
You don't want to take advice from your golf buddy or from your aunt. You want to listen to the scientists.
Can we all stop saying, I need to do my own research?
You see the ultimate effects of what happens when you don't listen to the scientists.
This isn't about being scared. This is about scaring us straight.
Science, science, and science. Only listen to the scientist.
If we follow the science, imagine, instead of staying locked up in their rooms, they're able to hug their grandchildren.
This isn't about freedom. It's about freedom for your neighbors.
What if I told you, ladies and gentlemen, absolutely everything they told you was wrong? Literally everything. I don't think there was a single damn thing they got right. From the origin of the virus to the danger of the virus to the efficacy of the solutions they proposed, they were wrong about everything. That's only half the story. The other half is that we were right. How were we right? They were so wrong. Because they were lying? Yeah, more to come.
Now in the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to dehumanization. The 21st century is going to be a new century. Not the century of slavery. Not the century of lies and issues of no significance and classism and statism and all the rest of those in control. It's going to be the age of humankind standing up for something pure and something right.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man.
I want freedom! That's what I want! And that's what you should want!
You're listening to Alex Jones.
The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out this buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it!
AlexJonesLive.com. Tomorrow's news today.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We are coming to you live from the Alex Jones Network. AlexJonesLive.com is the link to share. Of course, I hope you're following us on X. I'm at Harrison H. Smith, at Real Alex Jones, at AJN Live as well. If you're not on X, you really should be. If for no other reason, then it is a great way to communicate directly with people that you may want to talk to, including us, and tips you send us and all that sort of stuff. I have a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to be talking about the developments of the Iran negotiations, as well as just a whole swath of stuff. I mean, I've got Theo Vaughn coming out and talking about the data center scam that is. Tiffany Cianci is going to be joining me at 5 p.m. to talk about the new farm bill that's just come out. And of course, she is as I've coined her, the bubbly little fairy of death. Because every time she comes, she's a very happy, upbeat person, but she also, you know, is keeping an eye on things like the farm bill and seeing what poison pills are being inserted into it, because there always are. And it's infuriating. We also have James Tallarico, the Democrat Senate candidate here in Texas, who is just the most flagrant antichrist figure walking around right now. It's really amazing. His whole thing is pitching himself as a Christian. And then every time you see him talk about Christianity, it's about how he actually believes the complete reverse, the total inversion of what Christianity preaches, but still claims he's preaching lessons of Jesus. I got videos about him. I got a lot of videos to go to. The problem is, you know, whenever I watch Alex's full show, I pretty much watch Alex every single day, at least for an hour or so, but I'm doing my own news gathering. Obviously, things are breaking while he's on air. I want to, you know, be able to cover stuff that, you know, he hasn't seen yet, that sort of stuff. So I don't watch all the time. But today, of course, the Tucker Carlson interview, I was watching a lot before that. And what happens is I just then want to treat my show like a commentary on his show, because, of course, all of the topics he gets into, we should add to. One of the things is this idea with Tucker Carlson either creating a third party or possibly getting involved in politics somehow. And again, this idea that I also want to punish the Republicans. That wasn't really Tucker Carlson's take, more of a Nick Fuentes style take of, if you're not going to do what we need done for us, we don't have time to give you another chance. We don't have time to they screwed us this time, but maybe next time it'll be different. Well, there might not be a next time because of how you screwed us this time. So I'm all for that. But then the flip side is, what am I going to do? Vote for James Tallarico? That's just not an option. That's just not happening in any form, because, and this is the beauty of always having the initiative. This is the beauty of the bad guys, the adversary, the enemy, always launching the attacks and us always having to respond to it. The beauty for them is that the attacks are both real and a distraction. They set it up to where you can't ignore the attack. I can't just ignore the fact that the Democrats are hyper fixated on transgenderism. Because again, if you're watching the Tucker Carlson interview, you know, he sort of brushed off the transgender topic. Like, maybe they created this specifically as this you know, artificial division to separate people who would otherwise be aligned. Yeah, probably. I mean, that's certainly an aspect of it. You know, certainly a frustrating aspect of it. But at the end of the day, like, I've got a 5-year-old kid. He's going to school next year. Is he going to be taught about transgenderism? That is a, that's something that actually tangibly affects my life right now and in the immediate future. You can't just ignore that. Again, that's the beauty of, you know, it's the, I just shouldn't say the beauty. From their point of view, it's the beauty of running these types of operations, because you inject something like transgenderism. Yes, it is a distraction. Yes, it is pointless and wholly created out of whole cloth, totally unnecessary. It is a crisis that doesn't need to exist. It's a manufactured point of contention between the American people. Yes, all of that's true, but it's also real. It's also actually happening. It's also something we do actually have to contend with and try to fight back against. Why? Because we're on the defensive, because we're the ones trying to conserve things. And that fundamentally, I think, is the thing we have to get over, is this idea that there's anything worth preserving at this point. That doesn't mean we abandon our traditions, and like what we are trying to build is predicated on the values that existed in the past, but we're not trying to conserve anything because it's already lost, because it's already all gone. So we have to create something new. The trick is, the difficulty here is that the only people who seem to be offering something quote unquote new are the socialists or the communists, whereas the quote unquote conservatives are obsessed with just slowing down the progress of the communist or the socialist as they attempt to remake our whole order. So what we need to do is define what it is that we're trying to create. Now, to me, it is not abandoning the old morals. Like, progressivism as it exists now is this idea that we can remake humanity itself. And it's why it's absurd for the quote unquote progressives, the socialists or the communists, to think that they're at odds with the power structure, when it's the power structure itself that is the engine behind the societal changes that regular people don't want, the average person doesn't want, but that those in power want, because it makes you easier to control. So the progressivism that we're experiencing right now has its font, has its initiation from the likes of Larry Fink and BlackRock, who, you know, find that our traditional structure of society is a barrier to their absolute control and ownership of everything. Again, this is fundamental. This is metaphysical. This is like, what is the purpose of life? Where are we going to? What are we pursuing? What is the point of all of this? What is the point of the systems that we're running? We can't agree on the functions of the system. We also don't agree what the system should even do. Right? The system, the combination of all of these moving parts, it's like we're sitting here arguing about which tire to use on the car. We should be deciding, where is the car driving to? Why are we building a car? What is the point of this? Now, to me, the point is enumerated and illustrated in the Federalist Papers and the Constitution and the preamble to the Constitution, that what the point of government certainly is, and the point of human, you know, cooperation overall is to provide the freedom for people to pursue their own interests and decide for themselves the destiny that they're pursuing. That's it, right? Just get out of the way. Just facilitate the safety and the peace and the prosperity necessary for people to actually have and then pursue dreams. It's hard to have dreams if you're just wondering where the next meal is coming from, right? You want to keep people, you want to rise people out of the desperate sort of lower function, lower, what's the term, the hierarchy of needs. Like, you want to elevate people up to the higher hierarchy of needs, to where they're not just trying to live off subsistence or having to look over their shoulders and constantly be worried about being murdered by some sort of criminal. Like, that's the whole point. It's not to come in and dictate to you what your life should be like. That, by the way, is a structure of living, is a familial and societal structure that literally has never existed in all of human history. That's what they're trying to create. The Larry Fink, BlackRock, World Economic Forum / socialist communist style of living, there's a reason why they attack the nuclear family. There's a reason why they attack ownership itself. Because the way our world is structured is that You're supposed to try to accrue material wealth so that you can pass it on to your children, so that you can build a dynasty, so that you can leave your children off better than you were. You can have and build intergenerational wealth, hopefully hold on to it at the very least, if not, you know, expand it to an even greater degree as the whole of society grows and prospers, the individuals grow and prosper as well. They're doing away with that. They don't want you to be able to pass anything on to your children. They don't want you to receive anything from your parents. They certainly don't want you owning property. I mean, this is kind of an old way of thinking, right? You're going to own the property that you're on. You're going to be the landlord. You're going to be the lord of the manor. I mean, what is this, the 1600s? No, this is just the way that humans are supposed to live. This is the way that we incentivize our fellow Americans to choose the right path, because choosing a shortcut or attempting to screw people over never works out in the end. Like, that's the purpose of our government, is to guarantee that the people that behave correctly are rewarded for it societally, not in a direct way like a social credit score situation, but more in a naturally manifesting way, that those who are trustworthy earn more trust and are trusted more and are given more responsibility. Like, there's a natural function that our society is built to pursue, or a natural course that we're taking. The BlackRock, you know, out of left field progressive ideas to come in and say, actually, nobody's ever going to own a home. You're certainly not going to be able to pass any wealth onto your children. In fact, we're going to confiscate your wealth as soon as you're dead. We're going to make sure that everybody starts off at zero because, well, some people are naturally going to start off at zero, and for you to start off ahead of them, that's kind of unfair. So we're going to enforce a fake, unnatural equality on everybody where, yes, even, and of course, it's pretty difficult to raise up the lower percentile. It's much easier to bring down the top. So it's unfair, though. They write articles telling you that it's unfair that some kids have parents that read to them and other kids that don't. Is their solution to do everything they can to maximize the number of kids who have parents who can and will read to them? Of course not. That would be, how do we solve the underlying dysfunction in order to deal with the consequence of the dysfunction? How do we deal with the sickness, not just patch over the symptoms? The leftist view is the opposite. It's, you have to stop reading to your children because it's unfair to those other kids who don't have parents to read for them. All this is to say that we don't need to create a new way of life. We don't need to try to figure out how to maintain our, you know, humanity while simultaneously giving up on family, giving up on property, giving up on home ownership, giving up on just everything that has built this country. This is absurd. This is totally unnecessary. This is, in fact, just an obvious trick. A very obvious trick. As we've explained ad infinitum, like ad nauseum, the capitalists have to ruin the country for the communists to have a foothold. You have to have the abuses in order to pitch the radical new formation of society. Now, in the case of BlackRock and Larry Fink, they aren't even really pitching their view. They're just enforcing it without your input, right? They aren't making the case. They aren't going, hey, guys, this whole home ownership thing, it's actually a pain in the butt. It's actually a lot easier just to rent forever. Sure, you'll be paying the same amount that you would be for a mortgage, but at the end of 20 years, instead of owning a house, you'll own absolutely nothing. But it's actually better for you. You don't like having to change your patio lights, right? Well, if you rent, then the landlord will change that light bulb for you. And also, we'll have access to your property whenever we want because we have a key, because you don't actually own it. So we can comply with, you know, commands from the government with or without a search warrant. So there are other, you know, reasons they'd want it too. But they're not pitching it as if it's actually an improvement to your life that you would willingly choose. They know that you wouldn't choose it. Nobody would choose it. If given the choice between being a sovereign, conscious individual who owns a home and dictates the course of their own life, nobody would give that up to be a renting bug person in a box owned by Larry Fink. Nobody would actually make that choice. So they know that. That's why they're not letting you make that choice. That's why they're not putting it to a vote. They're enforcing it on you, whether you like it or not. So the only way to combat this is in a forceful, direct, aggressive, and offensive way. We have to be offensive in this. We cannot be defensive. The defensiveness, the conservative mindset, is what's got us to this point. Again, it's obvious, and I don't need to explain it to you, the ratchet-like system of governmental expansion, that it only ever goes in one direction, like a ratchet. A ratchet, you can spin in one direction, there's no resistance, you try to go the other way, and of course the tooth stops the gear and it doesn't go that direction. That's essentially where we're at. So if we are the, you know, tooth that stops the ratchet from going backwards, or tries to stop it from going forward, we can slow down the progress, but we can never tangibly or effectively or meaningfully roll it back. We have to roll it back. And so in order to roll it back, we have to identify what it is we're trying to pursue. And that is sort of the ultimate point of all of this. That's why I started this talking about how they have the initiative. They are the ones who are setting the board we all are playing the game on. They're the ones who are dictating to us our behavior because we are reacting to their aggression. It has to be the other way around. And this has been maybe the biggest disappointment with the current Trump administration is that for me, and I know a lot of people like me, we all thought that this was the mindset of the Trump administration. He was this break from the Republican Party, a break from the conservative tradition, because he was aggressive, because he did talk about, you know, actively using the government to pursue our ends in a way that conservatives, right-wingers in America, have been psyoped out of doing. We've been psyoped into thinking that small government is the only right-wing position. It's not, and in an increasingly, you know, consolidated world, it's not even a feasible suggestion at this point. There is no managing the empire of the United States with a small government. That's just not an option. So what you need to do is not even say, like, I don't like welfare. I don't like the welfare state because of how much money it costs and because of the, you know, underlying immorality of it all. That's obviously true, and it's okay not to like it for that, but that's not actually the pitch that's going to work, and it's not actually the solution that's going to fix this. We need radical solutions. We need monumental landscape-shifting changes in how we approach things, and primarily, we have to understand that nobody else is playing by the rules that we play by. Nobody else is concerned about the propriety of their actions, the legality of their actions. We are hamstrung by these beliefs because we believe them, we understand their value, but they're hamstringing us. So what do we do in this situation? And I think we have to get over the fear that most conservatives have of doing things like using the government to achieve your ends. Out of this, you know, sort of fear of government power as the ultimate evil that should be avoided at all costs. I don't think that's true. I don't think it's helpful. And I could think of a million, I mean, basically every topic that you care to talk about, you could see this phenomenon manifest. But, you know, look at something like DEI, right? You're not going to stop DEI with a suggestion. You're not going to stop DEI with guidelines or with, you know, whatever is anything other than a law that is genuinely enforced. And so the end of all this, like the point of this whole rant is, of course, something I've enunciated over and over again on this show, which is to save America. Really all we need, the one size fits all super solution, is enforce the law ruthlessly. That's it. I just solved all of America's problems in one sentence. Enforce the already existing law with ruthlessness. That's it. Every problem solved immediately. Because this is the trick. People want you to think that there needs to be a discussion about this. They want you to think that there's some sort of problem that needs to be investigated and discussed in order to come to a viable solution. You just throw the criminals in prison. You just punish the people that are doing the wrong thing. I've got examples from this that I'm kind of having a hard time even wrapping my mind around. The governor of Texas is on an interview complaining that Muslims are building a city that they have not been permitted to build, that they do not have permission to build. And it's like, why are you telling us this? Why don't you send police to stop them doing the thing they're not allowed to do? What the hell are you talking about? Why don't you go and you send an order from the government saying stop construction and you wrap up the construction material in caution tape and you arrest anybody that tries to keep going. There are so many instances like this where it's like, so they're breaking the law. The government admits they're breaking the law and they're just going to let them keep breaking the law. That's outrageous. Or the H-1B visa scandal, which of course, you know, ties in, dovetails to the story of Epic City or any of this stuff. It's like there is a law on the books that you have to make a genuine good faith effort to hire an American before you're allowed to hire an H-1B visa. It just is a law that's not enforced. It's just not enforced. So it doesn't matter. So it's not really a law then. So at the end of the day, it's not about trying to conserve anything. It's about trying to remake the country we once had. It's about shedding all of these restrictions, all of these weights that have been tied around our neck, and just reestablishing what we've lost, regaining what has been stolen from us. And we're not going to do that by asking the thieves to steal at a slower rate. We're not going to do that by appealing to the thieves' sense of morality. The only way that this works is if our government is run by people who understand the situation and then ruthlessly pursue our best interests, regardless of outsiders' opinions about it. It's the only solution. It's the only answer. It's the only method by which this system can be saved internally without some sort of major absolute total collapse, which I do not believe is coming, because you can look at places like South Africa or the USSR for that matter, and you can see that very bad systems, very inefficient, very ineffective, very dysfunctional systems can still persist for decade upon decade upon decade, and that's with the constant opposition from countries like America. You know, in the case of the USSR, communism, this ruthless, exploitative, dysfunctional system, it still operated for 80 years with a primary world power in opposition to it, fighting proxy wars against it all over the globe for that entire time. What happens if America falls? There is no other country who will be fighting to free us. What happens if, you know, this feedback loop of chaos and destruction and degeneracy reaches the point of no return? What do we do? What do you do at that point? It's not enough just to stop the aggression from the left. We have to actively destroy it. We have to disenfranchise the people who don't have our best interests in mind. We have to ruthlessly expel everybody that's invaded our country. We have to cancel all of the visas and simply expel them. And once again, anybody telling you, anybody even suggesting that there might be some barrier to achieving any of the most extreme policies that would save America, it's a lie. It's just a lie. This is the most frustrating part, is like we just run up against this barrier of rhetoric that isn't real. There's nothing behind it. There's no substance to it. It's illusionary, but we can't break through it no matter how hard we try. And at a certain point, we just need to do what we know is necessary. What form that takes, I don't really know. Again, ideally, you'd elect somebody like who Donald Trump presented himself as. If Donald Trump, you know, really did just seize the reins and just hardcore went after the DEI stuff, there wouldn't be DEI, but he didn't, so there is.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are listener and viewer supported. It's very simple, thealexshowstore.com. You back us, you fund us, you are everything. And we bring you the very best products, the very best supplements, the very best water filtration systems, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, the very best knives, silver coins, you name it, so that you get a great product and empower yourself while at the same time empowering yourself and free humanity against the globalists. So, a lot of new things at thealexshowstore.com. Look at these belts. They are super comfortable. They are incredible high quality. They are so durable. They'll last a lifetime. And the way they're designed is something special. So I paid like $75 a year or so ago for a similar belt. And I told Bigley, I like this type of belt. Why don't you get these? They got belts even better than the one I bought about a year ago that I love. And they're selling them for $39 right now. That is a big discount out of the gate at theellisshowstore.com. Premium nylon tactical belt. This is the premium nylon tactical belt available now at theellisshowstore.com for only $39.99. It's built from heavy-duty nylon webbing with a smooth automatic ratchet buckle. No holes, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit whether you're working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. And we've got them in three editions. On the buckle is a little cross, a 1776 edition, and Alex Jones signature edition, making it original and special. It's all black, tactical, clean, durable, and built for everyday use. It's murdered out. It's off black. And right now it's only $39 at thealexjonesstore.com. They are premium. They look great. They have knocked it out of the park with this product. Get yours today and also buy gifts for friends and family and know you're fighting the tip of the spear in the fight against tyranny. Also, Bigley knocked it out. Highest rating, level with the carbon filters, beautiful, highest grade stainless steel for lower price than other systems that aren't even as good. We're so proud of this. The first group sold out. More coming in about a week and a half. So get your order in now to make sure it's ahead of the line. Those are now available. This is platinum level, gravity fed, water filtration, and it makes this operation possible. Multi-tested by top companies to take out hundreds and hundreds of bad chemicals at non-detectable levels, the atrazine, the glyphosate, all of it. You should do this for your family. Do this for yourself. It's a big 3-gallon system. It's amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And then we have the widest selection of Patriot apparel. Some of the designs are the best. Some of them are okay. I'll just be honest. Some of the designs I come up with are okay. But I came up with the concepts of these new shirts. Limited edition, 250th anniversary of America, July 4th, special edition. So it's sold through the middle of June, through July, and then we're not going to sell these T-shirts anymore. They look so good, they'll probably come up with another variant or something. But these are limited edition, Liberty or Death, 1776, 2026. They came up with that. I love it. The simple one I came up with, America, 250 years strong. Nice, simple, clean, kind of got like a polo look to it. Look at that one. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. Gadsden flag on the Betsy Ross flag. I came up with that design. I'm really proud of these. They're very clean. You'll meet a lot of like-minded people wearing these. Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. I designed that bad boy. They designed the 1776, 250 years of freedom. Oh, I love the one they designed with the brass knuckles, 1776 free. Defund the deep state. That's all their designs. America, ride fast, live free. They designed that. Ball caps as well. All limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And to keep us on the air, take action now. Big Brother hates it when you fund the tip of the spear. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Folks, yeah, we do have a lot of news about COVID, and again, you know, I wish I could be more excited about this. There's some new information coming out. I mean, once again, we're in a situation where we've had the black and white line illustration of what's happened. Now we're filling in the color, right? But it doesn't change the picture that we're looking at. You know, we've got this from Kanoka the Great on X. Why did Fauci's NIAID and USAID send $44 million in U.S. taxpayer funding to the Wuhan scientist studying the risk of bat coronavirus emergence who later became the world's first COVID-19 case? Well, because they were creating a manufactured gain-of-function virus to release on the world. That's why. What do you mean, why? What? Why else? There's only one reason, and we lived through it. It's called the lockdown, COVID-19. So, again, it's nice to actually have the amounts and the money and where it was sent and who it was sent to and why it was sent and how it relates directly, incontrovertibly, to the emergence of COVID and the subsequent cover-up by Anthony Fauci. But what is the point? But what is the point of knowing all of this if nothing is done about it? What is the point of sending a subpoena to Anthony Fauci to force him to come testify and be questioned about this when he's already gotten away with lying to Congress. I mean, one of the things that he would be charged with criminally would be lying to Congress about his involvement with the intelligence agencies and covering up the gain-of-function research that started COVID-19. He lied about that, angrily lied about it, right? Aggressively shouted about how dare you question me. He lied. He lied to Congress right out in the open. Now we're going to subpoena him to go in front of Congress and be asked about that. What? Why would he be truthful to Congress? He literally is, as we speak, getting away with having lied to Congress. So I'm not sure what we expect to get out of him. He'll probably just lie more. He gets away with it. So it's one of these things. Am I happy that Anthony Fauci, like this information's coming out and that he's being subpoenaed by Rand Paul to go testify in front of Congress? Sure, that's better than nothing happening, but not really. Not much. Not much better. Just kind of strange to me. It's kind of like when they fine banks a percentage of the money they've stolen. It's like Wells Fargo ran a scam where they stole $40 million and they've been punished with a fine of $1.5 million. And it's like, okay, so you just let them make $38.5 million. That's not a great punishment. Like, what do you think is going to happen after that? They're going to just factor in $1.5 million in their overhead cost of how to make $40 million. They're going to keep doing the same thing, which, of course, they do. Maybe not Wells Fargo, but that's the bank that jumps to my mind because I was a victim of their manipulation. I lost a bunch of money. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, so every time I overdrafted, it cost me $30 in penalties. They did it to me like four times. Turns out it was because they were illegally shifting around how they processed overdraft fees. But don't worry, I got a check in the mail after the settlement for $4. Okay, so they may have cost me hundreds, but at least I got $4 back. Like, that's basically how our government operates at this point. Only with Anthony Fauci, it's even less than that because he has suffered nothing. He has not suffered at all because of what he did, which was, I remind you, released a virus that potentially killed millions of people, locked us down, destroyed a generation of children's mental health as they're forced to isolate from their friends and family. Maybe the worst crime that's ever been committed. I think it would be up there. It would certainly be up there, creating and releasing this virus and then managing the response in such a fragrant, like, I don't even have words for it. I mean, we all lived through it. Hopefully you remember it. Some people don't. But until he's arrested and punished, like, what are we doing here? What is the point of any of this? It's really just a humiliation ritual. You lied to Congress, so now we're going to make you lie to Congress more. And he's going to get up and he's going to smirk confidently. And he's going to say, I have nothing to hide. I'll answer all your questions. What do you have for me? And then he'll lie through his teeth and he'll walk out a free man. What is the point of that? Why are we putting ourselves through this? So again, I got a lot of, you know, breaking news to get to, but I think I actually want to play a video that I was going to play yesterday. But it's one of these things that happens to me when I'm news gathering and I've already got like 80 videos prepared. And then like 5 minutes before the show goes on, I see a new video. And what I'm tempted to do is yesterday, I was thinking about starting the show with this video, but I knew if I started the show with the video, I would stick on the video for probably too long and never get to the actual substance of the news today. But we're going to do it today. We're going to look at the video. It's about empathy. We're going to be instructed. We're going to learn from the leftist how to be empathetic. They're going to teach us. Really, they're going to be shocked and appalled at our lack of empathy for the poor, innocent, downtrodden of the world. Let's go to clip number 23. This is Hollywood actor John C. Reilly talking about what an empathetic person he is. We'll comment on the other side. Let's watch.
You know, if you stand up for human rights, why is that a right or a left thing? Why aren't people on the right wing concerned about human rights? They're human too. This whole thing that like kind of has come into vogue of like empathy trap, You know, it's an empathy trap. You know, like that's what Elon Musk says, like empathy is like, don't be fooled by the empathy trap.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know,
all right, let me, let's go and pause right there. Let's go and pause right there, shall we? We got to define term. I think we have to define terms here, Mr. Riley. What do you mean by human rights? What does that mean? Who is fighting for human rights? Like, in their perception, I guess human rights are like to cross dress and dance in front of children. Like, that's sort of where they're at on human rights. To me, human rights are things like the ability to speak freely. It's things like not being arrested for showing anger at the person who raped you. Like, that's what's happening in Europe. You think John C. Reilly gives a damn about any of that? Like, where there's actually human rights being horribly taken advantage of, destroyed, violated continuously, the left has absolutely no concern whatsoever. Absolutely none. They have taken the term human rights and applied it to all sorts of things that are not rights, human or otherwise. They're benefits from the government or whatever else. But then he talks about the empathy trap and he tries to explain it to this woman who is shocked and appalled at this concept because, of course, when you completely misrepresent, deliberately misrepresent a concept to be something entirely different than what it is, yeah, it can seem appalling. And I can't, I really don't think these people can be that stupid. You can't be this stupid. I guess we'll let him continue, but he's, you're talking about the empathy trap is how he phrases it. I don't think I've ever heard that. I've heard of suicidal empathy. We'll go back to John C. Reilly, and then I'll try to explain to him why having empathy for people that are doing wrong to you is not actually a virtue. Having empathy with criminals and scam artists is just called being a sucker. It's not called being empathetic. It's called being tricked. It's called being taken advantage of. You're not a good person because you get taken advantage of, you absolute morons. Here's John C. Reilly's explanation of what the empathy trap is.
Holy.
Don't start feeling bad for so-and-so. They're on their own thing. Look out for number one. Like, it's like, wait a minute. Empathy is not a trap. Empathy is a superpower.
That's right.
That's what makes human beings exceptional, our ability to, like, look outside of ourselves. We're not an alligator trying to just get the next fish, you know? We're human beings. We can relate to something that's not us.
Okay, pause it right there. Couple things. He doesn't actually have empathy. He projects his own mindset onto other people and then acts as if they share. It's like actually the opposite of, it's actually almost like a disability that makes you incapable of empathy. He doesn't empathize with the working class white people in this country or anywhere in Europe that are, I don't know, being subjected to criminal rape gangs for decades on end. He has no empathy for those people whatsoever. He has empathy for the rape gang criminals. And he has this idea that by talking about empathy, suicidal empathy, or the empathy trap, that you're demonizing empathy. I don't know how to explain this stuff to an idiot. I mean, if you can't understand how empathy can be used against you, what are you talking about? Okay, so here's an example. One time when I was like 18, I was at a party at a friend's house. He was going to U of H, so he lived in the Third Ward, which is a very dangerous neighborhood in Houston. And we were outside, and his front yard had a little fence around it, and we're all hanging out in the front yard, drinking, smoking, whatever. And this woman comes up to the fence, and she's like crying, and she's like disheveled, and she's like, oh, help me, my husband's beating me, help me. And so I'm the one right there by the gate, and I'm just like, what are you talking about? And she's like, oh, you gotta let me in. I'm like, I'm, my husband beat me, and I ran away from him. And I didn't believe her. She didn't look like she'd been beaten. I don't know where she like came out of the bushes, literally. And I'm just like, what are you talking about, lady? You're not coming in here. If you're really in danger, we'll call the cops and we'll wait here by you. You know, we'll make sure nobody messes with you until the cops come. But like you're not coming in. Like, what are you talking about? And it was just all, the whole thing was very suspicious. Now, if I'd been an idiot and a sucker, God only knows. I don't know why she was trying to get in. But by the way, when I was like, no, I'll call the, if you're in danger, I'll call the cops and you can stand right here and we'll wait with you. But like, I'm not going to let you in this party. That's not going to happen. And she immediately stopped crying, stood up and was like, F you, and walked away, right? Because she wasn't really in danger, because it was a trick, because she was trying to play on my empathy, trying to get me to believe that she needed help. I don't even know what she would steal things. Like, God only knows she was, but she wasn't running from a husband that was beating her. She wasn't in danger and in need of my empathy. She was using my empathy, or trying to do something that I wouldn't have wanted her to do, right? Is this not unbelievably obvious to everybody? That if I tell you this story, that doesn't mean I'm like, so therefore you should be unempathetic to everybody. Therefore, if somebody really is in danger, you should spin on them and walk over them on your path to glory. Like, what? No, it's just, if somebody's actually in danger, you do everything you can to help them. If they're not actually in danger, you see their pleas and their, you know, trying to get you to believe they are in danger. That's a trick. It's an insult, really. It's actually just evidence of their lack of character and more reason to not trust them or have anything to do with them or listen to them about anything. Is this not fundamental to being a human being? That having empathy for people that are lying to you is just being a sucker? Is this not obvious? Is it not obvious that empathy is different than sympathy? We have two words for them because they're not the same thing. In other words, I can empathize with a criminal. Absolutely. I can put myself in that mindset. I can put myself in the mindset of a murderer. I've gotten mad enough that I've wanted to kill something before. I can put myself in the mindset of somebody who goes over that edge. It's not hard to empathize with bad people doing criminal things. That doesn't mean that you believe them or think it's okay what they're doing. You just can put yourself in their mindset and understand rationally why they're doing what they're doing. Sympathy is when you agree with them, when you have a fellow feeling with them, when you think you're right. He was right to do that sort of thing. So in other words, I can empathize with a Somali family coming over to America and starting a fraudulent daycare service where they bilk millions of dollars out of our coffers. I can empathize with that. I really can. I can empathize with what it's like to be a despicable con artist scammer and to find a field of suckers to harvest. I can imagine exactly what it would be like to think these stupid Americans are going to open up their door to me. I'm going to get in there and I'm going to take them for everything they're worth. And they're so dumb that even if I get caught, I'll just call them racist and they'll leave me alone. See, when you empathize with somebody like that, you aren't on their side. You don't suddenly think, well, okay, so I guess it's good what they're doing. You recognize, oh, this mindset is evil. Oh, I can empathize with what is motivating this person and what is informing their worldview. As I empathize with it, I understand the feeling of being an evil, dirtbag, scum person that deserves to be expelled forcibly. That's what real empathy is. Real empathy is understanding that not everybody thinks like you. See, John C. Reilly, if he tries to empathize with a Somali person, he's going to be thinking, what would make me leave a country? What would make me, John C. Reilly, seek solace in another country? It would have to get really bad and I'd have to be really in a tough spot. And when I went there, I would be so thankful for the people that brought me in. But that's not how these people are thinking. See, you're empathizing with yourself. You're empathizing with your own projection onto them, projecting your own mindset onto a situation in which they are thinking entirely differently. If you actually empathize, if you actually put yourself in their shoes, you look down and go, oh, these are the shoes of a con artist scammer that doesn't deserve my sympathy at all. Again, is this complicated? Is this hard to understand? Empathy in the way that he's describing it is only ever useful if the person thinks like you and is you, essentially. The empathy he's describing, it's not empathy. It's something else entirely. It is a solipsistic mirror projection of his own soul on everybody else. And he's a weak little quisling. So I guess he assumes everybody else is like that. But again, it's this idea that if you don't willingly give up everything that is asked of you from whoever asks it, you're an alligator person that only sees the next meal in front of you as you pursue it, blind to wider humanity. If he actually was in tune with the real, you know, I'm a overly empathetic person at times. Like it's embarrassing. I can't help but like really strongly feel what other people are feeling very often. And yeah, it's a benefit in certain regards, but it's also, you know, there are times where it's not very useful. But that means that I can empathize with both the tragedy that's gotten people in situations that they don't deserve. I can also blame them in part if they deserve blame for how they got there. But as I look around, like I see the, you know, overworked mom of two that's struggling to, you know, keep food on her family's table and who's been screwed over by iteration after iteration of trade deal and regulation that has made it more difficult for her to get or keep a job. I can see the way her, you know, kids are abused for their race in school. And then I can see right down the street that there's some Somali guy with four new cars and a brand new house paid off in full. And I can see, okay, I have empathy and I feel sad for and I feel sorry for and I want to help the overworked single mother who's just trying to keep things together. And I can have disdain and even hatred for the person who is taking advantage of the situation, is making everything worse for everybody. Even if, and here's the clincher, even if that single mother doesn't complain and the rich millionaire scam artist is constantly crying crocodile tears, it doesn't matter to me. Cause I'm not empathetic like John C. Reilly wants me to be empathetic, wants me to believe the lies of the scam artist and have disdain for the actual victims, because his view of empathy is a literal inversion of how it should actually be wielded these days. Back to John C. Reilly here.
Power. It's also the cornerstone of civilization. The fact that we stay at the red light and don't just zoom out because we want to get through the life faster, because what will happen? Well, we might smash into someone. Well, you don't know that person. Yeah, but I still don't want to smash into them. You know, like, those are the building blocks of civilization. That's the agreement that we treat. I mean, it's very Catholic to do unto others, yeah. You know, treat your brother as you would treat yourself, you know, like.
And to your point about the right wing.
It's crazy that we have to argue for these things right now.
It's
that's a really upside down world feeling.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? I mean, it's crazy that he uses that example, the red light, like you all stop at the red light. Like that's not really empathy either. Again, he's kind of confused. He's like, but then you might crash. Like you have to be empathetic. No. How do you explain this? I mean, it's especially interesting for me because I have this very distinct memory of living in DC. Like I've never had this problem in Texas. As long as I've lived here, it's always been just a matter of course. The lights go out. There's a big storm. The red lights are blinking, whatever it is. And everybody just automatically, you drive to the front, you stop, you treat it like a four-way stop. It's not hard. It's not complicated. Everybody does it appropriately and everybody gets through. It's about understanding that by, you know, submerging your own desires beneath what's best for the group, it's better for everybody. And you do it willingly and without coercion. And I remember being in DC and I'd never seen it before, but time and time again, the power would go out. There'd be no red lights and it would, and you could almost see it. It's like, okay, these people aren't even really conscious of what they're doing. It's just the car in front of them goes, so they go. And it's like they're driving so aggressively because they're like, ah, screw it. I'm just not waiting. I'm going to go and screw everybody else. They're just not thinking. They see the car in front of them go and they go, okay, I guess we must be going. And they go also. And then the car behind them go. And then suddenly you're sitting there at what should be a four-way light and you're just watching this endless stream of cars crossing because, well, if nobody's going to stop them and, you know, hey, the car in front of me is doing it, I might as well do it too. And it's this, you know, there's this herd mentality that takes over. And again, I've never seen that in Texas, but I saw it over and over again in the Northeast when people would just do that. And that is sort of at the heart of it. That is what liberty is about. And if you want to say it's what, you know, the civilization itself is about, fine. But that's not even really empathy. That's just basic understanding of second order effects. And that's a matter of intelligence, not necessarily empathy. And the reason why that attitude has collapsed in this country is a matter of diversity. It's a matter of division overall. Kind of the same words, but when you don't have fellow feeling with your fellow American, when you go, well, I'm going to stop for this light, but nobody else is, you kind of feel like a sucker, and you're actually kind of incentivized to run the red light because everybody else is going to, and you can't afford to be left behind. There's a feedback loop of criminality that we're engaged in right now that has very little to do with empathy, but has a lot to do with people being consciousless, without conscience, and incapable of thinking for themselves. That's the real issue here. And again, you know, John C. Reilly, ask him about things that are actually happening. Ask him about people actually being affected by forces beyond their control. And he has nothing but disdain and probably even hatred for a lot of them. But he will preen endlessly about empathy, even though, as far as I can tell, he doesn't even really understand what the word means. So once again, when I see somebody run a red light because they just don't know any better, like I can empathize and go, okay, that person's brain needs to be out of my country. Whoever is operating like that is a danger to me and my family and needs to be expelled immediately. I think that's all I wanted to say about that. This idea that, and you know, I don't even know how you deal with it, because it's like, the problem with suicidal empathy is like maybe the biggest problem in the world right now is all these people who have endless empathy and sympathy and feel sorry for people that don't deserve it and have never done anything, you know, worthy of being treated that way. That's like the biggest problem in the world. But then you try to explain that to people and they're just like, so you don't like empathy? So you don't think other people are people? It's just like, no, I'm saying other people are scam artists. They're con artists. They're tricking you. They're using your empathy to destroy you. Can you empathize with that? Can you empathize with a criminal? Can you empathize with a con artist? Because I can. And when I empathize with the con artists, I look around at people like John C. Reilly and I think, what a giant sucker. What an absolute moron. I'm going to go tell him that I'm just a poor, innocent refugee. Can I have money? And he'll probably give it to me because he's so stupid. That's their version of empathy to you. See, they actually can empathize with you. They understand exactly how you think. They understand your mindset. That's why they can take advantage of it so easily. Wake up, John C. Reilly. You freak.
Have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th. 2026 coming up, and they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026, and they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this and the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition, with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America 250 Years Strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyrannies in 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, Ride Fast, Live Free, just a classic Betsy Ross flag, 1776 Free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the Deep State. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 Years of Freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So a nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You're going to promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you're really going to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. So, hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America You name it. That's a good looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. Second hour of War Room Live is on. We'll be joined by Tiffany Cianci in the third hour. I got a lot of videos to go to. I'll stop just ranting endlessly here. We got some pretty interesting developments on a number of different fronts, including a new announcement, clip 19 here. Todd Blanche has announced another raft of charges for healthcare fraudsters and scam artists. Here is, and a lot of talk about whether he'll be made the official head of the DOJ. He is the acting head right now, or whether he'll move into where Tulsi Gabbard was. But here's, Todd Blanche announcing a big roundup of healthcare fraudsters. Let's watch.
Today we are announcing federal and state charges, all of which were charged or unsealed at some point over the past 2 weeks, the past 14 days. Coordinated nationwide action. Since June 8th, we've charged 455 defendants across 56, like I said a minute ago, U.S. attorney's offices, and 45 U.S. states and territories. As alleged in the various indictments, these individuals participated in healthcare fraud schemes involving over $6.5 billion in false claims submitted to Medicare, Medicaid, and other healthcare programs. The team around me will get into more specifics, but here are a few points that stand out. In one indictment, we're bringing charges against a corporate executive in Arizona in connection to over a $1 billion fraud involving unnecessary wound grafts. This alleged scheme costs Medicare over $1 million per patient. In total, our indictment charges 11 defendants for over $2 billion in fraudulent claims in connection to alleged wound care schemes. The indictment also alleges that these individuals then used the taxpayer money to bankroll multi-million dollar homes, luxury vehicles like a $135,000 Maserati, jewelry like an $865,000 Bulgari necklace, and to top it all off, to fund the construction of a $4.6 million hotel at a beach resort in the Philippines. We're taking back the money, the luxury cars, the jewelry, and these alleged fraudsters will face justice. The coordinated actions of the past 2 weeks have resulted in over $182 million in cash and other assets seized, making clear our healthcare fraud enforcement efforts generate a significant return on investment for our taxpayers.
But where's your empathy, Todd Blanche? Where's your empathy? Can you believe these Republicans just cut off $6.5 billion in healthcare funding for low-income people? I mean, the heartlessness, the ruthlessness, the lack of empathy. It's shocking to see. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche announced that 455 defendants across 45 states and American territories have been charged with healthcare fraud schemes since June 8th. These schemes saw $6.5 billion in false claims being submitted to federally funded healthcare programs like Medicare and Medicaid. Todd Blanche detailed a few of the schemes. DOJ is bringing charges against an Arizona provider that billed false claims for wound grafts over $1 billion. He stole $1 billion from the government. $1 billion. It's like, wow. I'm sorry. What the hell? When you have programs that can go one, or in this case, $6.5 billion over budget and you don't even notice, I think we have a major issue here. The federal government spends $1.1 trillion on Medicare per year and $930 billion on Medicaid. Blanche has now revealed that billions of those dollars are misdirected into fraudulent schemes. Blanche said the DOJ intends to recover as much of the funds as possible through asset seizure. But where's the, it's so unempathetic. Where's the empathy? you know? This guy really wanted his own hotel in the Philippines, okay? Can't you empathize with that? Can't you empathize with the poor, downtrodden billionaire fraudster that just wants to make his own hotel? I mean, where is the humanity here?
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at RealAlexJones and on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShowLive. And don't forget to download the app. Go to AlexJonesApp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
Welcome back, folks. Second hour of War Room is on. Everything is just so insane. Honestly, I don't even know. I don't even know where to go from here. In the UK, it's just a little example. Just the modern world in a nutshell. 15-year-olds are allowed to have social media. Are not allowed to have social media. So up until you're 15. No social media. You got to be 16 to get social media in the UK. However, 5-year-old children are now permitted to have puberty blockers because the government said so. So you can't have social media until you're old enough to drive. But if you want to permanently change your physiognomy, if you want to alter and deform and disfigure your physical being for the rest of your life, you can do that at 5 years old. Here's a member of parliament talking about it. Let's watch this video.
Madam Deputy Speaker, a parent cannot consent to their child engaging in sexual activity, and soon they won't be able to consent to their child having a social media account. So why does the Secretary of State think that a parent should consent to drugs being administered to their child to suppress their puberty and alter their sexual development?
Yeah. Health Secretary.
Well, Madam Deputy Speaker, we are following clinical advice. We are making sure that there is a triple lock on the consent for children and young people to be involved in this trial, involving the consent or assent of the young person themselves, the consent of parents or guardians, the NHS care team, the national multidisciplinary team that I mentioned earlier. That is how this trial ensures that there is a high bar for being involved in this trial, and that all aspects of a young person's life are considered.
That's a lot of words to say yes. Say yes, that is actually what happens. 5-year-olds can be put on puberty blockers, but parents cannot consent to them being on social media. And it gets crazier, and it gets significantly crazier, because obviously this is happening all across Europe at exactly the same time and exactly the same way. Digital ID, age verification on the basis of we have to stop kids being groomed online while simultaneously burying the massive grooming scandal that they themselves facilitated with the importation of immigrants. And now, all across Europe, social media bans will prevent children from doing things like logging onto Facebook, but if you want to kill yourself, no age limit. That's actually fine. You can do that 12 years old. Child in under the age of 12 euthanized in the Netherlands. For the first time since a change in the law in the Netherlands, a child under the age of 12 has died by euthanasia. The death of the child was confirmed by the country's health minister, Sophie Hermans, as she presented the annual report to the committee that reviews all late-term abortions, and medically assisted deaths of children to Parliament on Monday. According to the report, the child was under the age of 12 and had been seriously ill, but no further details were given. Assisted dying for terminally sick children aged 1 to 12 has been legal for 2 years in the Netherlands. Before the change in the law, only newborns and those over 12 could be euthanized. Under Dutch law, parents must be consulted. Oh, well, that's nice. Well, that's not, that's good. I mean, you'd hate to think you were going to medically murder a 12-year-old without the parents' permission. I'm glad they get the parents' permission first. That's a comfort. The child's death has been referred to Public Prosecution Service, which will decide if doctors complied with the rules surrounding euthanasia. The committee's report will be made public shortly, they say. Under Dutch law, in cases of euthanasia, parents must be consulted. The child must be suffering unbearably, and there can be no chance of recovery. Euthanasia in the Netherlands is only permitted if the request comes from the patient, and if a doctor agrees they're suffering unbearably, the doctor must be satisfied that the patient is not acting under pressure and must obtain a second opinion. Euthanasia has strong public support in the Netherlands, and the country became the first country to legalize it for those with incurable illnesses in 2002. So again, how about we don't euthanize any children? What if just, and I understand there's going to be nuances to this argument, but I'm just going to stake out my position right now. How about no killing children by doctors? Can we just establish that right out? Which again is just genuinely insane. Genuinely insane. What else is there to say about it? They're euthanizing children under 12 in the Netherlands. So I'm against that personally. I'm against that sort of thing. And like, I wonder, like, is it worth it to get into the wider philosophical underpinnings of this, like where this is going, how we're being sort of dragged into this reality, how the powers that be are really doing everything they can to make people okay with dying unnaturally. The whole process of, you know, what's his name? Emmanuel. He's one of the brothers, right? Ari Emanuel, one of them, can't remember which one, wrote the article about nobody should live past the age of 70. We should all just be okay with surrendering ourselves to the furnace once we've stopped, you know, being productive for our capitalist system. Meanwhile, he's like 76 years old now, hasn't killed himself. Isn't that weird? Yeah, there it is. Why I hope to die at 75, Ezekiel J. Emanuel. One of the, how should we put it, unelected aristocracy of this country. One of the families, like the Pritzkers, the Emanuels, just every sibling and every cousin just happens to be a super high-powered something or other, and they all happen to have the most anti-human, despicable mindsets of all time, but that are being normalized around the world. Do I need to explain where this goes? Do I need to explain the purpose of devaluing human life like this, of normalizing the idea that, oh, your kid's got Down syndrome, into the furnace he goes? Do I need to explain why that's bad? I mean, it's just completely insane. This is why I can't bear to be lectured about empathy from the left. The classic. You know, a phrase I always think of is, they don't want you to say retarded, but they do want you to kill them. They don't want you saying the word retarded, because that you're not being very empathetic towards the retarded. You have to have empathy, but you know how bad it feels for them to hear, you know, their condition used as an insult? You should have empathy for them. And then you're like, okay, well, the child that you're pregnant with is Down syndrome. And they're like, flush it out, throw it down the toilet, get rid of it immediately. We're not going to be lectured to about empathy by these people. I swear. It's been that way my whole life. I just remember being in elementary school and one of my best friends from preschool had a brother that was Down syndrome. And I was like the only kid in school that treated the Down syndrome kid like a human being. You're going to tell me you're more empathetic than me. All right. Meanwhile, There's just so much. All right. Antifa leader Benjamin Song sentenced to 100 years of for Texas anti-ICE terror attack. Seven other militants also sentenced. Once again, I would like to point out the fact that this should be the biggest story in America, should continue to be the biggest story. Every update to this trial should be repeated ad nauseum by the very same people that spent a year and a half covering January 6th every day. What happened in Texas made January 6th look like exactly what it was, a walk through the Capitol, an unapproved tour. What happened in Texas was the epitome. It was the, you know, the perfect illustration of domestic terror of the most dangerous sort. And yet, nobody in mainstream media is covering this. People even in the alternative media are hardly covering this. This is, in fact, the only article I could find covering this today from Postmillennial. Eight members of a North Texas Antifa cell have been given decades in prison for their role in an attack on an ICE detention facility in the state in July of 2025. Sentences handed down to the group of eight militants ranged from 30 years to 100 years. Ringleader Benjamin Hanil Song received the highest sentence, with U.S. District Judge Mark T. Pittman sentencing him to 100 years, Andy Ngo reported. Song has been convicted of charges that include attempted murder and discharging a firearm in furtherance of a crime and violence, the most serious charges in the case. Song had shot Alvarado Police Lieutenant Thomas Gross in the neck during the attack on the facility, which took place on the 4th of July, 2025. Pittman also sentenced trans militant Bradford Megan Morris to 50 years in prison, Maricela Roida to 70 years in prison, Elizabeth Soto to 50 years in prison. In another courtroom, Chief U.S. Justice Reed O'Connor sentenced four other defendants in the case. Cameron Ardold, also known as Autumn Hill, was sentenced to 50 years in prison, as well as Zachary Evitz and Savannah Batten. Daniel Ronaldo Sanchez Estrada, a Mexican national, was sentenced to 30 years in prison. So these people conspired together, established a plan of action, and then carried out a vicious armed attack against an ICE facility. This is one of a number of violent attacks against ICE, including multiple shootings that year. And yet, talk to the average person, they're still suffering, laboring under the delusion that right-wingers are the number one terror threat, that 90% of terror attacks or hate crimes in this country are committed by right-wing white nationalists, because that's the lie they've been fed over and over, because like we've illustrated, again, ad infinitum, ad nauseum, the mainstream media, its number one role is either establishing or disguising trends. And if this, if everything, like if there was just an algorithmic news outlet that just treated everything in with no narrative, no agenda whatsoever, obviously this attack would receive way more coverage than even something like January 6th would receive, because what this represents is the actual, you know, dangerous underlying current vibrating beneath the surface of American society. It's these types of groups carrying out these types of attacks, these types of strategies, these types of ideologies that are actually the biggest danger to not just the individuals in our country, but to the country itself, to our system, absolutely everything. This is the real danger. But by not reporting on it, by not even mentioning it, you know, maybe you get one little mention, oh, by the way, the crazy terrorists that are totally unaffiliated with anybody that attacked, because they're probably all mentally ill, they were sentenced and moving on. What should be happening here is we should be, every time you turn on the TV, you should hear experts talking about the necessary steps to de-radicalize the left, the new bills that need to be passed to allow us, you know, more access to their communication so we can stop them before they get to the point where they're actually carrying out the attack. We would, and I'm not even saying I would agree with that, but you would see this type of language, this type of rhetoric, these types of policies being put forward. Why don't you? Because the media doesn't call for that, because the media isn't pushing this as a trend. They're not explaining that this is a regular occurrence, that attacks that share similar attributes, similar motivations, similar demographics carrying them out. If they were to report on these every time they happen to the extent they deserve, it would be obvious to everybody this is a major issue in this country and it needs to be confronted. And the steps that Donald Trump has supposedly taken up to this point aren't actually happening. He declared Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. That happened. Since then, nothing has been done about it. The whole point of declaring them an international and domestic terrorist organization was that it would open up a whole toolbox of weapons to use against them. That you can arrest not just them, but the people who conspired with them. You can get them all in a conspiracy charge, or you can go after the people that give money because it's illegal to fund a terrorist organization. It opens up this massive, very useful set of tools that we could have been using since September of this year, or October, whenever they declared Antifa a terrorist organization. And yet, every time TPUSA tries to have an event, Antifa shows up and violently disrupts it. They're still out there. They're still operating. No arrests have been made, except for when they almost get away with this vicious and violent and nearly deadly attack. Again, just to lay out to you what this trial was. Seven co-defendants have pled guilty to charges ahead of the trial, while five others agreed to cooperate with prosecutors. 16 convicted defendants and six co-defendants will also face charges that include attempted murder, domestic terrorism, and conspiracy in Johnson County. That alone. You're talking about a small town in Texas having a terror cell of 24 people. 24 people were willing to conspire to carry out a violent military attack against the ICE facility with the purpose of murdering agents. A small town in Texas has dozens of people actively participating in a violent attack on law enforcement. And this doesn't even get a mention in the mainstream news. Again, this was a multi-step, multi-stage ambush assault. Prosecutors said a group of suspects set off fireworks, vandalized vehicles, and opened fire on responding officers during the July 4th attack. Video evidence shown at the trial showed the group arriving in black block attire and being equipped with firearms, body armor, medical supplies, and explosive devices. One of the co-defendants who pleaded guilty before the trial, Lynette Sharp, told jurors that members of the group trained together with firearms and coordinated through encrypted messaging apps like Signal. Evidence shown to the jurors showed members planning the direct action. So again, we have to hear about how Patriot Front is the worst thing in the world, because they march around holding flags and they have shields because they constantly get attacked and they constantly retreat, defending themselves and not fighting back. And we're supposed to think they're the worst people in the world. This is the reason we need new counter-terror measures in this country. Meanwhile, you've got dozens of Antifa members training with firearms, then conspiring together, dressing in all black, arming themselves, showing up at an ICE facility, setting off fireworks to draw out the agents, and then firing on the agents from elevated concealed sniper nests in order to kill them. I haven't heard a policy speech about this. I haven't heard congressmen make a big deal out of this. You cannot find this story on mainstream media. It gets one article in one alternative news outlet, and that's it. As if it never happened, as if it was a routine thing. I've heard more about the, as far as I can tell, basically non-existent threat to attack the UFC, where apparently there's a bunch of people planning stuff that they had no ability to carry out, using weapons they didn't actually have access to, under instruction from what is very likely to be undercover agents in the U.S. Army. But see, they want to make something out of that. They want something from that. They want to do something with that. So they're going to report on it a lot. They're going to cover it as if it's real. They're going to use it and say, if we didn't have these surveillance measures, we wouldn't have been able to find this and it would have been a disaster. So you have to, you know, re-up the NDA or whatever they're trying to get. See, they want something from it. So they're going to create the situation in the first place out of whole cloth and then manufacture the, you know, societal outrage about it so that they can weaponize that, manufacture it into political policy because they want to. You're going to hear more about the non-existent attack that didn't actually happen than you're ever going to hear about the literal, act of rebellion, act of revolt. I mean, this was a sizable number of people physically attacking, one of the armed bureaus of our country, and it's just treated like, crazy. Those crazy hippies, those crazy leftists are at it again. Anyway, we'll move on. It's like, maybe we should focus on this. Maybe we should, do something about this. I mean, look at these freaks. Look at these freaks, psychos, deformed monsters. Why don't we know all of their names? Why don't we have profiles on these people? Why isn't the mainstream media investigating? What led down this path? What media did they listen to? Who did they watch? Where did they communicate on social media? Did they have X accounts or Facebook accounts? Or do they have accounts on Blue Sky? Maybe we need to look into that whole thing. Remember how Parler was taken down after January 6th, even though by the admission of the authorities, almost all the planning took place on Facebook and Twitter, but they were left alone and Parler was taken out. Why can't we have even a modicum of the same fervor and seriousness that the left seems to have? We're the ones who are actually being destroyed. We're the ones who are actually under threat. We're the ones who are actually oppressed by the state, actually constantly disadvantaged by the powers against us. And yet we don't stand up in the way that the left does when they get everything they want whenever they want. And it's infuriating. And if we can do one thing here, if we can do one thing in this, with this outlet, this mission we've dedicated ourselves to, I would hope it's to wake people up to the reality of the world that they live in. So you cannot just read this article and go, I got arrested and sentenced. Well, good. Glad we got a handle on that. But recognize there's a lot being left out of this story. There's a reason why they aren't publicizing this in the same way that everybody else does, that every other attack would be publicized. When you really think about it, when you really investigate this stuff and try to figure out what the motivation is behind, what you realize is it's not an accident that every single media outlet falls in line in exactly the same way about exactly the same stories, because it is a universal overarching plot by the people in power to destroy this country from the inside out. These Antifa scumbag idiot mutants are just the foot soldiers of the elite who want them to do exactly what they're doing, which is why the media outlets the elite control never report on it. Now, folks, I have a very exciting announcement to make. Exciting for me, exciting for you. It's really exciting for all of us because it is the return of Ultimate Power. It is the return of the Energy and Focus Patriot Punch and Mango Mix from the AlexJonesStore.com, Alex Jones Naturals, Ultimate Power Drink Mix. I know one of our most beloved products ever, and one of my favorite products that we've ever had on the store was Turbo Force. This stuff is so much more powerful than Turbo Force. It will absolutely knock your socks off. You asked for it. It's finally back in stock. Ultimate Power at the AlexJonesStore.com. It is a clean daily performance formula built to support energy, focus, blood flow, stamina, and endurance. So whether you're working, training, taking care of your family, or just trying to feel sharp and strong again, this is your go-to. It only has 100 milligrams of caffeine. It's about the same as a normal cup of coffee, but it's paired with L-theanine to give you a smoother, cleaner energy without the jitters or the crash. It's Ultimate Power. It's back in stock. Get yourself some of the Ultimate Power. Feel the power. Unleash your potential. Energy and focus, available now, thealexjonesstore.com. This stuff's going to sell out. Get it quick. Tell your friends, and you can get Alex to the Alex Jones app as well, alexjonesapp.com. Especially you young people, the Zoomers listening to me, go help your grandparents. I literally, when I was in Colorado, was installing the app on my grandmother's phone, doing the shortcut to the Rumble channel so she could always find the live stream. Technology's moving. We're moving with it, and we got to make sure to pull everybody along with us. And of course, you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We have incredible products there. I'm kind of a kind of a sucker for all of the products that we have at thealexjonesstore.com because they're all awesome. And it's like, it's not a thing I'm getting paid to do, right? Like, I could always carry around my old wallet, but I got the new wallet because it's so awesome and I've been so happy with it the entire time. Now we have these premium nylon tactical belts available at thealexjonesstore.com. They're only $39.99 and they are of equivalent design, quality, standards, aesthetics, just amazing stuff. You will never be disappointed with the quality of items at thealexjonesstore.com. Whether it's the supplements or the gear like this, it's always top-notch, just like we try to keep our coverage always top-notch. Might be an ironic thing to say for a belt that has no notches. It is a heavy-duty nylon webbing with smooth automatic ratchet buckle, so there's no holes, no notches, no guessing, no too tight or too loose. You just adjust it to exactly where you want it, and it stays there. You get a perfect micro-adjustable fit, whether you're out working, carrying, driving, sitting at your desk, or on the move. We've got three unique designs, the Cross Edition, the 1776 Edition, and the Alex Jones Signature Edition. You can get each one of these for under $40, but for a limited time, you can get all three designs bundled together for only $99. If you want my advice, they make fantastic gifts, so if you want one, go ahead and get all three, and then give your least favorite two out as gifts. Heck, buy six and give three of them out as gifts. And of course, the America 250 Birthday Limited Edition 4th of July Apparel Sale is on. Folks, 4th of July is coming up quick. You're not going to want to be out there wearing like a purple shirt, right? You're going to want to be decked out head to toe in the most patriotic gear you can find. And the best place to get it, hands down, is thealexjonesstore.com. This collection right now is 30% off. So again, you're running out of time to get this before July 4th, so it's delivered and you can wear it with pride on Independence Day, coming up very, very quickly. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com. Check out the America 250 Limited Edition 4th of July Apparel Collection. It's 30% off right now. We also have gravity-fed water filter systems back in stock, because we are, at the end of the day, but humble water filter salesmen here trying to both provide, because it's always the way we've been. You've got to not just combat this stuff at the political level. You've got to protect yourself in the meantime. In other words, they put chemicals in the water. We want to be activists. We want to be protesters. We want to be running for office to get that changed, to get the stuff removed from the water. In the meantime, filter your water. It goes like that. Destroying Tyranny Since 1776, Betsy Ross Snake t-shirt. It's like, how many banned logos can you put on a single shirt? How many logos that would get you kicked out of the U.S. military or investigated by the FBI can we put on a shirt? Because believe it or not, that is the state of freedom of this in this country, at least a few years ago. Do you remember there was a serial, like a list of symbols that had been banned by the U.S. Army for, you know, extremist ties? Embrace freedom and our symbols and our history unapologetically, proudly, and by going to thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very strange set of circumstances when it comes to the negotiations with Iran. Story at AlexJonesLive.com. Trump says Iran negotiations going well. Strait of Hormuz is open, but no ships can pass, which is an entirely different situation. If you remember, Pete Hegseth said about a month ago that the strait was totally open except for the missiles that would be fired at the ships. I mean, it's open, but your ship will be destroyed if you try to go through it. This is totally different. Now the ships aren't passing, but the strait is open, okay? So I guess it's kind of the same. Actually, I guess it hasn't changed much at all. The strait is open. It's just not actually passing any ships right now. On Tuesday morning, President Trump announced the U.S.-Iranian negotiations are going well, and the Islamic Republic agreed to ongoing nuclear inspections. While the president said that the Strait of Hormuz is now open, no ships will pass through it, which means it's effectively closed. So, good. Glad we're I'm glad this memorandum of understanding is bringing us so much understanding. It's like the memorandum of understanding that makes everything less easy to understand. The ceasefire in which no fire is ceased. The strait is open, but you can't actually go through it. This is what it's like. This is what it's like trying to cover this stuff. It's like, well, then what is, then, okay, so it's the same situation as always. No developments have occurred. Strait is still closed. And here we are. Great. If you say so. It's stuff like this. Iran rejects new claims by Trump, Vance, and Treasury Secretary Bessent that Iran has agreed to nuclear site inspections as a first step in permanently denuclearizing Iran. They say the U.S. claims are very damaging, and the arrival of IAEA inspectors would itself violate the MOU, with Iranian officials having already prevented IAEA Director Grossi from attending Sunday's negotiations and emphasizing that Iran's nuclear ambiguity policy, where the location of enriched materials is not known to the U.S., is one of Iran's most important strategic assets that it will not give up and would only benefit the enemy if compromised, per Tasnim. So again, this is what I'm talking about, folks. It's been like this for a week since the MOU was announced. Everything has been immediately contradicted by everything else. You know, it's just like, genuinely, I have no words. I have no words for what it's been like for the last week, where it's like, Israel is going to stop bombing Lebanon, except they launched 150 new air raids, and the strait is open except that no boats are passing through it, and we've already agreed on this very substantial portion of the potential ceasefire agreement, and Iran completely denounces it and says, we didn't even talk about that. Where are you getting this information? So what is there to say? I mean, at this point, it really seems like you should just be getting your news directly from Iran, because absolutely everything that the American side says is immediately contradicted by the Iranian side. And this is no small thing, since Iran is, in fact, one of the two parties negotiating. Like, you can't just say, like, well, they're lying about this. Like, I don't think they are. I think they're the ones that get to decide. I think it's actually up to them whether or not they want to let nuclear inspectors in. If Donald Trump says that and they contradict it, I'm going with them. I think they're the ones who get to dictate whether that is the case or not. Iranian spokesman Baghaei says that Iran made, quote, no new commitments on the nuclear file during the 18 hours of Switzerland talks. It did not negotiate the nuclear issue at all and does not plan to in the future. Iran further described IAEA inspectors as America's foot soldiers, which Iran says is the reason why no officials have agreed to inspections. Okay, so that's one aspect of the talks that Trump, you know, came out and said, absolutely, we definitely, you know, decided on this, only to have the Iranian party completely contradict him. But there's more. Iran's negotiating team strongly rejects Pakistan PM Shahbaz Sharif's claim that Iran-U.S. talks will discuss ballistic missiles as, quote, completely wrong and, quote, stemming from pure ignorance, with Iran emphasizing that the missile issue is, quote, fundamentally not on the table, and published MOU text shows such topics are included, per Fars. Iran adds Pakistan, quote, does not play a significant role in mediating these talks at all, and that Shahbaz Sharif's statements were made to exaggerate the mediation role of Pakistan, while Qatar plays the most effective role in current mediation. All right, so it's not just American authorities that are apparently saying things that are untrue about the MOU. It's the Pakistan PM as well. Well, great. Okay. Again, how are we supposed to understand any of this when everything is contradicted immediately by everything else? It doesn't seem possible. Even CNN has the story. Trump keeps claiming Iran made concessions. Iran keeps denying them. Ever since releasing a memorandum of understanding last week that appeared heavily slanted towards Iran, the Trump administration kept claiming Tehran agreed to other major concessions in the ongoing negotiations. The problem is that none of them appeared in the MOU, and Iran keeps denying them. And given the Trump administration's own demonstrated credibility problems, it's not at all clear whom to trust. I think it's pretty clear. I mean, let's see. Trump keeps saying things that are beneficial to his image. Trump keeps making statements that make it appear as though his side is winning And then the other side contradicts those and says that's not happening. Who do you think is more motivated to lie about this? It's not all that complicated. Again, now the Pakistani prime minister has confirmed that the Iranian missile program will not be discussed with the Americans, saying the MOU does not mention ballistic missiles. Iran's side never wanted to even discuss it. Again, we've been explaining this for the last 2 years, that Iran has these ballistic missiles, that America got them to the table while saying they wanted to negotiate nukes, and then suddenly made a demand that they give up the industry, the primary industry of their country. This is a ridiculous request that was never going to succeed. Is this in English? Let's watch this if we can understand it.
Ballistic missiles. It was never on the table. It was never on the agenda. And Iran side never wanted to even discuss about it. So that is not an impression. That is a fact of matter.
Okay, so now we have some better understanding of that for now. Who knows who that'll be contradicted by next. Let's go to clip 41 here. This is a Iranian member of the Iranian diplomat corps there talking about, again, sort of the disrespect that they feel from the Trump administration. Let's watch.
قاب باشیم اینم دلیل داره که حالا من وقتش اینجا نیست توضیح بدم
طبیعتا ما اون موقع وارد سالون شدیم. Let's go to 43 here. I can read along the subtitles. This is the Iran leader on the ceasefire with the United States. Let's watch. He says, when we say we don't want a ceasefire, it's not because we are seeking war. It's because this war must end in a way that ensures our enemies never again think of repeating these attacks and aggression. And I think they've already learned a valuable lesson. They've realized what kind of nation they're dealing with. One that won't hesitate to defend itself and is ready to take this fight as far as necessary. So to me, like that's the Rosetta Stone of understanding everything going on in these conflicts. That is Iran's motivation. That is the position they're staking out. They have no incentive to change from that position. He says, we don't want a ceasefire. It's not because we want war. It's because we have to make them understand they can't do this to us and not suffer the repercussions. Iran is not begging for peace. Iran is not defeated and prostrate and willing to make concessions wherever they can. They won this conflict. They are winning this war. These negotiations have to be held on that understanding. That has to be the starting point because it's true, because it's reality. Trump seems unwilling to face that reality, but that's the reality, and that's who he's negotiating with. People who say, we're not going to settle this because we don't have to. Because all of your threats are meaningless to us because you tried your best to take us out. It didn't work. And so your threats mean nothing. Why would they? That's just reality. That's just where we're at. You can think whatever you want about it. You can say whatever you want about it. That's just what the lay of the land is. That's how the board is set. And Trump has to operate within that. What about clip 42? Do we have that translated, or is that in scribble language? Because they also are sort of mocking the stance of the likes of J.D. Vance, who yesterday we showed the clip where he's saying, look, this $300 billion, it's not American money, it'd be investment from the Gulf states, and it would all have to go to American agriculture. And so then the Iranians, it's scribble language, I hear. It's not in English, but essentially what they're saying is they're basically mocking the fact that this is now the war aim. He's like, it went from we're going to close the strait and destroy Iran completely, bring them totally to their knees and replace their leadership and destroy their country utterly, to actually this is a big boon for American farmers. Actually, this is all about getting subsidies for the American agricultural sector. It's like, what is this? How are we so far off the mark? And of course, the reality is that that statement from J.D. Vance, that situation that, you know, he laid out was purely just to try to put lipstick on a pig. It was trying to make this absolute and abject defeat that we've suffered look like something that would benefit for us. It actually has nothing to do with the negotiations. It's about selling the war to the American people, claiming that, you know, this wasn't an abject and outright failure across the board. We also have Marco Rubio. If Iran's leadership makes a decision that they want the country, that they want to be a country instead of a revolutionary movement, they're going to have the opportunity to do incredible things. Again, what are you offering them that they need? Like, it would be one thing if they were struggling and miserable and suffering, which to a certain extent they obviously are. The sanctions have had a pretty sizable impact, but this idea that we're going to bomb them to hell, kill all of their leaders, murder their children in their elementary schools, and then turn around and go, surrendering to us would really open up a lot of financial opportunities here. I don't know if these people understand who they're negotiating with. Let's go to Marco Rubio. Let's go to this. Here's Secretary of State Marco Rubio talking about the potential benefits of Iran for joining our wonderful coalition of nations. Let's watch.
If Iran makes a decision, if its leadership makes a decision that they want to be a country instead of a revolutionary movement that exports terror, they're going to have an opportunity to do incredible things in Iran. I'm not promising you that that's the choice they're going to make. I'm saying if that's the choice that they make, then there will be opportunities. And those opportunities could include investment, as you've seen other countries in this region benefit from investment, from foreign direct investment. It won't be our investment. It won't be our government money. But I think that that is something that's going to have to depend on progress made on a host of other security issues that have to be confronted in the days to come.
So this, you know, again, we have explained this entire time, and I've kept a finger on this pulse of this reality since Trump's second administration began, which is there are two distinct factions inside the Trump administration. Where J.D. Vance lines on this is kind of hard to say, but there's the pro-Israel, pro-war faction, and there's the pro-America, anti-war faction. And we have been reporting on this the entire time. That's what Signalgate was all about, and that's what firing of Mike Waltz was all about, all of the firings of Pete Hegseth's assistants, all this sort of stuff. Right now, I guess these two sides are best illustrated by Marco Rubio versus J.D. Vance, although, again, where J.D. Vance lands in all of this and what his real motivations are, I think are still, you know, up for debate, but I think it's a pretty good way to understand this is that you've got the Marco Rubio neocon establishment side versus the J.D. Vance America first, let's decouple from Israel, but I can't actually say that side. Here's Ben Shapiro on what he thinks about the J.D. Vance-led contingent negotiating in Switzerland. Let's watch.
Here he was talking about how awesome Pakistan, they're just the best. They're a Chinese cutout gang. Pakistan is in the negotiations because the Chinese wanted them there. They're an Islamist dictatorship.
What?
This is ridiculous.
Hold on, let's pause. What is he talking about? Because China wants them there? China's twisting Iran's arms, are they? I think Pakistan is perfectly capable of making that decision for themselves. I don't understand why China would be involved in this. He says Pakistan is a Chinese cutout, but it's also an Islamic dictatorship. And Pakistan's got some problems. It's actually a really interesting country. If you look up, like, the whole reason they have a nuclear program, it's like this one dude that just, like, single-handedly modernized Pakistan and got them all this stuff in cooperation with Western countries because this was in the Cold War. Like, Pakistan is much more a Western puppet than a Chinese puppet. And we looked at this a lot last year and the year before with the Prime Minister Khan and the way he was driven out of office. Like, that was all from our interpretation, orchestrated by the West to keep it Islamicized. I don't know where Ben Shapiro is coming up with this stuff. What's the problem with Pakistan? What's the issue with it? Let's go back to old Benny Boy, the rat.
How are you about the Pakistani role, especially?
Very good. We love Pakistan. Thank you.
We love Pakistan. Okay, he says as he walks through the room. We love Pakistan. Do we? Do we love Pakistan?
Yes.
Like here he was praising the Pakistanis.
To his field marshal in Pakistan, Asim Munir, I will say that since Field Marshal Munir welcomed us with the Prime Minister in Islamabad, I have joked that I have two very, very important people in my life, an Indian and a Pakistani. The Indian is my wife, and the Pakistani is Field Marshal Munir. And I've probably talked to Field Marshal Munir more than I've talked to anybody else over the last 3 months.
That's magical. Isn't that nice? Isn't that wonderful? No, it's weak and ridiculous. That Field Marshal has literally called for the destruction of the State of Israel, which is our ally in this war, unless you forgot.
Yeah, it's. I keep forgetting that they're our ally in this war because of how much help they give us and how great they are to be friends with. Pakistan's also our ally. And it's like, what does he, I just don't even understand. What does he expect the Vice President of the United States to say to the country that is helping to facilitate these talks? They're like, hey, you know, Pakistan loves you, and you're supposed to turn around and be like, you're all Islamists. You don't like Israel, so F you. No, he says we love Pakistan. Sorry, Ben. Sorry, Ben. I don't know if the Israelis would treat that differently, but I think he's just trying to find things to be mad at this point, which is good. It's a return to form for Ben Shapiro. He was always an ever-Trumper. He always hated J.D. Vance. He only liked them momentarily when they were doing what he wanted for Israel. And for that brief flash of time, he pretended to support Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. And it's the only time in his career that he's actually pretended to support those figures, because fundamentally he is diametrically opposed to what MAGA represents. But when they serve Israel, he'll call everybody that opposes them AOC. He'll claim they're all leftists. Well, he's a leftist now. Sorry. I mean, maybe we could do a little historical study. Who's been a better ally to us, Pakistan or Israel? Who's cost us more? Who's screwed us over more? I mean, it's not even a question. Meanwhile, Israel targeted Gaza children, resulting in genocide, a UN inquiry said. Oh, well, great. Wow, we figured it out. Thank goodness. Now we have this UN study. I guess we'll throw it on the pile. This is the part of the show where we go over the crimes that we've known about forever, that have been very publicly exposed for years, and we get to produce more evidence of more investigations into the same crimes, and all these investigations come to the same conclusions, and then nothing happens about it. It's kind of shocking how similar these situations are, whether you're looking at Anthony Fauci or the State of Israel. It's like, oh, look, another investigation. Oh, look, it turns out they're committing genocide. Oh, look, it turns out Anthony Fauci created the virus. Like, it, yeah, no, we know. We are well aware. So it's great. Now we have another thing to point to, another study that will not be actioned upon, will not actually see justice come about as a consequence of this investigation. Just be more of the same. Israel deliberately targeted Palestinian children, UN inquiry says. Israel calls the report a libelous sham that it strives to minimize harm against children. A report found that 30% of people killed in the Gaza war were children. 30%. Inquiry says Israel carried out crimes against humanity in the West Bank. So I'm sure any day now they'll be treated just like the Nazis, just like they deserve to be. It'll happen one of these days, I swear. New Lebanon-Israel talks are beginning, apparently, in the shadow of U.S.-Iran deal. Israel also admits now that they did smuggle Starlink systems into Iran according to the former prime minister, which, of course, we reported on at the time. We're called anti-Semitic conspiracy theorists for saying. Retired generals, admirals, intelligence officials, diplomats, and former government officials who advise policymakers on the Middle East met with Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel as they again attempt to work their eighth front war of subversion against the United States using a bunch of traitors and quislings as their foot soldiers, pictured here with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And of course, as a consequence of all of this, Trump not only gets negative reviews nationally with his support cratering across the board, but of course, internationally, our reputation has been ruined. The United States is no longer trusted internationally because we keep betraying that trust for the sake of Israel. So again, just relentless costs, no benefit, never get any benefit whatsoever for our endless support of that genocidal nation. And I think that's all I need to say about that. I think I've said enough about that, and it's just the same thing over and over. What I'm going to do now, in preparation for Tiffany Cianci coming on here and probably delivering us some bombshell story about what's in the new farm bill, as it's always something that is designed explicitly to destroy the well-being of the American people. I'm going to prepare for this with a little bit of Ultimate Power from the AlexJonesStore.com. Ultimate Power is the powdered drink mix. Just plop it in there, mix it up, and chug it down. It is an energy drink mix. If you were a fan of Turbo Force, you will absolutely be a fan of Ultimate Power. It's like Turbo Force, but even better, even tastier, even more jam-packed with the vitamins, minerals, and nutrients you need to not just get you going, but keep you going throughout the day. I did a big heaping serving of it, stirring it with my golden spoon here. And it's not just caffeine, right? You go get an energy drink. It's 90% sugar, 10% caffeine. It makes you feel very energized for a little while, and then you crash. This stuff has absolutely no crash. And we actually have the full breakdown of all of the ingredients in Ultimate Power and what they do. There's a daily power blend for full spectrum matrix. There's a dose of about 7,000 milligrams of that proprietary combination. L-citrulline is in that blend. Basically, the blend is made up of these things. L-citrulline, which helps with nitric oxide production, vasodilation, as well as muscle pumps. Taurine, which helps with endurance, reduces oxidative stress, cardiovascular support, and has a great deal of cardiovascular support. Alpha GPC 50% is a premium nootropic. Green tea extract, L-theanine, natural caffeine, vitamin B6, and vitamin B12, that's methylcobalamin. All of these in massive amounts, massive bioavailability. And, of course, it tastes great and keeps us funded. All of this at thealexjonesstore.com. Stay with us. We'll be back on the other side with Tiffany Cianci.
It took them 2 years to do it. When Bigley came on as our sponsor, now the owner of the Alex Jones Network and then the main backer, I said, I want gravity-fed filters. I sent them the test from previous sponsors, and I said, these guys fell off. Their quality wasn't as good. I got rid of them. This happens to these companies. There's only out of more than 50 gravity-fed companies, three or four that have the very best filters that cut everything out. They're stainless steel, and they start cutting the quality for whatever reason. I said, I want the highest-rated stainless steel. I want a clone of these products, but even better, and I want filters rated this high or higher. They went out, took them 2 years, they did it. This is something everybody needs, everybody wants. There's a giant market of folks that know how wonderful gravity-fed filters are and know what quality is. We have all the tests published on the site. It's the best. There are companies selling filters that the stainless steel isn't as nice, anywhere close, and the filters aren't even the highest rated. They're selling the damn things for $400. They're selling units similar to ours, aren't even as good, for $500 retail, discounting at $400. These babies are $300 and even lower for VIP members. There is very small markup. The markup is not even 100% in these, okay? And when you're VIP, it's even lower. That is the best deal. This is a home run. This is the best. This is going to help hire new crew on top of the crew, extra crew. It's going to help getting new reporters and hosts and the new network getting completed with all the equipment stuff. I mean, this is a big investment here. We're rebuilding our operations. We can't do it without you. So your word of mouth for the show, alexjoneslive.com, getting the free app, sharing that with others where they can get it, alexjonesapp.com, following us on Exit Real Alex Jones, following us on Rumble at rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShow Live. That's all critical in telling others to do that. Your word of mouth, your prayer is king, but getting these products is also critical. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you because we want you to love it and be impressed with it so we have a relationship with you.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Senator Johnson, can we get you on the COVID cover-up? So why do you think legacy media such as CNN is not covering this?
Why aren't you covering this?
I want to ask you about Iran, the war in Iran.
You know, you really ought to cover the fact that Peter Marks knew on March 1st of 2021 that their algorithms were hiding safety signals. On 26 days later, found out 25 serious adverse events like sudden cardiac death, pulmonary infarction, Bell's palsy, different types of strokes, and they buried it. They hid it. It's a major scandal. It's even as big a scandal that the major media is completely ignoring the story. It's been out now for almost 6 weeks.
Before the COVID pandemic, Dr. Fauci, as head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, provided millions in U.S. taxpayer dollars to fund dangerous gain-of-function research on bat coronaviruses at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, work which is now widely viewed as the source of the unintentional lab leak that sparked the pandemic.
What they thought was going to happen during Biden and Kamala, that they would take out a lot of my generation and older, clear the deck, turned out the bioweapon wasn't fully tunable. And guess what happened?
We took out the wrong demographic.
They took you out. Before COVID begins in 2019, we get this guy from Harvard University arrested at the airport, caught with 21 vials of nanobat technology. His name's Charles Lieber. Two guys from China who worked in Wuhan gets arrested with him. They take the 21 vials away. He's the expert in wideband technology. That was what they were going to use to tune the bioweapon to take us out. They had to redeploy and put that stuff in Ukraine because they had to protect China from stealing this technology. Who wasn't ready? Pfizer. So what does Pfizer decide to do? They go downstairs three floors to their genetic department and they find SV40. They use SV40 to design their jab because they're late to the game. And what do they then do? They tell their scientists to use a molecular tool to take the evidence of SV40 out, and then they present a clean version to the FDA and they get approved.
CDC awarded Pfizer $735 million plus dollars for infant COVID shots, paying them, and the government tried to say it was mandatory when it wasn't, to then poison babies with it. This is the pure evil, the kind of stuff they've been trying to suppress the public from knowing. Then they also paid the federal government over $2 billion to major pharmacies. Most of it went to CVS and Walgreens to not prescribe ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, even though the elites were all taking it, and it was proven to be very effective.
How many thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of people are permanently disabled or possibly lost their life because our FDA hid the fact that there were safety signals screaming at them with the COVID injection?
I gotta tell you, Maha should be in an outrage. This was a massive issue on the campaign. It's still a massive issue. Many parents do not want their children to ever receive a COVID vaccine shot. Why? Kids don't need it.
Good job, MTG. Now, here I am in 2009, 10, and 11, exposing UN documents, WF planning, Operation Lockstep, CIA, John Hopkins. People ask how to know about lockdown, 6 feet apart, masking. They admitted it was about training you to be a slave, to be locked in your house. Once cell phones got up to a point they could track and control you, which they had way before COVID, they were going to implement this as the new slave control grid. That's how I knew.
Rockefeller study envisions future dictatorship controlled by elite, millions being killed, mandatory quarantines, checkpoints, the end of the family, everything that's in the other documents. But this dovetails with all the other Rockefeller Foundation documents about the GMO food to sterilize you and the forced vaccines and the hell we're already living in. That's just going to continue to intensify until we take our governments back from these eugenics madmen. These people are so arrogant that they write policy papers, so many of them, that they're producing these policy papers and reports and white papers so fast that you could never read them all. It is an open conspiracy against you and your family. The only chance we've got of beating this scientific dictatorship, this creeping death that takes its time to incrementally enslave you, mentally, psychologically, physically, spiritually. The only way to defeat it is for the rank and file of this planet to realize that you have a choice to make on what your destiny is going to be. Once you face this information, once you've consciously admitted it to yourself, it will take over your life. It should take over your life. Let me announce the kickoff of the summer sale. This is going to run for 2 weeks, and different items for only 3 days will be buy one, get one free. Right now, it's Ultra Methylene Blue, the very best methylene blue. You've heard about methylene blue. Ours is medical grade. Buy one, get one free. Another big deal on tri-iodine, the best, cleanest iodine. Take action now. The start of summer sale kickoff is now live. And look at this. Nice black hat, high quality, with a nice leather patch, made in the USA. Just classy. And that's from Dickie. Really proud of that. And look at this bad boy. I designed this bad boy, the concept. 1776, Redneck Deluxe. I mean, that is good stuff with the two-crossed musket rifles. That is a good-looking, good old boy right there. And it funds the Second American Revolution worldwide. Get it all now at thealexjonesstore.com and stick your finger right in New World Order's all CNI and say, screw you, globalists. We're keeping Alex Jones on the air.
You are listening to an AJN Live Frontline Report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Our conversation is with Mr. Yuri Alexandrovich Bezmianov. He was the son of a high-ranking Soviet Army officer. He had an outstanding career with the press agency of the Soviet Union. It turns out that this is also a front for the KGB. He escaped to the West in 1970 after becoming totally disgusted with the Soviet system, and he did this at great risk to his life. He certainly is one of the world's outstanding experts on the subject of Soviet propaganda and disinformation and active measures. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean?
Ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country. It's a great brainwashing process, and it's divided in four basic stages. The first one being demoralization. A person who was demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell nothing to him.
Do you believe then that men can become pregnant and have abortions?
Yes. What has this world come to? It's come to a world where drag kids actually exist.
And people do ketamine on a couch.
The next stage is destabilization. Economy.
There are some dire predictions on where the world economy is going.
Foreign relations.
Some of the world's superpowers could be on a collision course.
Defense systems.
The U.S. Army is cutting back its expectations due to, quote, unprecedented recruitment challenges.
The next stage, of course, is crisis.
Folks, we're in a crisis.
After crisis, you have so-called the period of normalization.
When we say getting back to normal, we mean something very different from what we're going through right now.
The demoralization process is basically completed already. I could never believe it when I landed in this part of the world that the process will go that fast. This is exactly what the KGB and Marxist-Leninist propaganda wants from Americans, to distract their opinion and attention from real issues of the United States, to have a bunch of duped Americans, then Americans who are healthy, physically fit, and alert to the reality.
What is your ideal political or social structure?
Communist utopia.
That's why my KGB instructors specifically made the point, try to get into filthy rich movie makers, intellectuals, cynical, egocentric people who can look into your eyes with angelic expression and tell you a lie. These are the people who KGB wanted very much to recruit. It's all these professors and all these beautiful civil rights defenders. They are instrumental in the process of subversion only to destabilize the nation. When their job is completed, they think that they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. The psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will join the links of dissenters. Marxist-Leninist regime does not tolerate these people. In future, these people will be simply squashed like cockroaches. Nobody is going to pay them nothing for their beautiful, noble ideas of equality. The United States is in the state of war. The initiator of this war is the world communist system.
The only solution is communist revolution. That's right, we need communists. That's what we need.
This is it. This is the last country of freedom and possibility.
Okay, so what do we do? What is your recommendation to the American people?
The immediate thing that comes to my mind is, of course, there must be a very strong national effort to educate people in the spirit of real patriotism, number one. Number two, to explain them the real danger of socialist, communist, whatever, welfare state, big brother government. If people will fail to grasp the impending danger, nothing ever can help United States. You may kiss goodbye to your freedom, including your precious lives. I know Americans don't like to listen to things which are unpleasant. I tried to get the message across. To my horror, nobody wanted even to listen, least of all to believe what I had to say. The time bomb is ticking. With every second, the disaster is coming closer and closer. Unlike myself, you will have nowhere to defect to. United States, wake up.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are. But don't despair. We found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
All right, everybody, welcome back. This is Tiffany Cianci for the Alex Jones Network, where I am very unexpectedly filling in for Harrison today for the last hour of this show. Thank you guys so much for joining me. And if you are not familiar with who I am Tiffany Cianci on TikTok and YouTube. I am the Vino Mom on X and Instagram, and I make a lot of appearances on this show where you all refer to me as the bubbly little fairy of doom. Today, I was joining Harrison to talk about a few really important issues, and today instead, I get to talk to you guys. So thanks so much for having me on. We're going to start today with a video about an issue that I'm really passionate about in the Maha community, but an issue that's unifying people from both sides of the aisle, And it's called the Save Our Bacon Act, which sounds lovely because we want to save bacon. The problem is bacon doesn't need to be saved. It needs to be saved from the monopolists that wrote this bill. So we're going to start with video number one, which is from Joe Redden, the older millennial, who has been talking about this issue a lot online. And then we're going to talk about it here.
So have you guys heard about like the Save Our Bacon Act, right? And the Farm Bill? Seen some videos talking about it, but honestly, I hadn't dug into it. And I had somebody reach out and actually explain it to me. And it is really, really bad. The Save Our Bacon Act, right? This actually passed the House already as part of.
So my congresswoman did an awesome thing. My congresswoman being Anna Paulina Luna. God, she's so hot. Anyway, so the Luna Amendment passed in the House, which stripped the pesticide liability shield from the Farm Bill, meaning that when a pesticide company gives you cancer, you can sue them. And I gotta say, this is proof that organizing, talking to your congresspeople can actually have an effect. Now, sadly, the second amendment that Representative Luna tried to pass did. This was where she tried to remove the Save Our Bacon Act from the same House bill. Now, the sad thing is, this is kind of on us, right? Because we levied a great amount of pressure on our congresspeople to get that pesticide protection out. But we didn't have the same energy for the Save Our Bacon Act. And because we didn't do that, Congress didn't feel the need to act. Now, the bill heads to the Senate Agricultural Committee. And even though the chairman said he didn't want the Save Our Bacon Act in his draft because the House passed it, he's going to leave it in. Now, a lot of you probably have no idea what the Save Our Bacon Act is, but simply put, it is a federal takeover of state agriculture. It basically bars any state or local government from passing any regulation regarding agriculture in their state. And it puts it all at the federal level. Like, let's be real, that's not good. But the cool thing is, we know that pressure makes them change things, at least when it comes to agriculture. So I'm going to do something that I rarely do, which is tell you to contact your congressman. I know I reached out to mine. So do me a favor and tag your representative in the comments.
All right, everybody. So that's Joe Redden. He is the older millennial on every single platform and somebody that's very, very openly on the right, right? This is an issue that is bringing farmers together. It's really pushing together the agricultural and Midland of the United States to fight for this, but people don't really know what it is. The Save Our Bacon Act is very similar to what you guys have been helping me fight for in pesticide immunity with each of my visits to the show, right? What you're seeing is two international monopolies, right, that have come together and written a bill that they handed some Congress people, the people that they've already donated tons of money to. We're talking about the owners of Smithfield, which we always knew was an American company, but was actually acquired by a Chinese conglomerate just about a decade ago. And they have a monopoly on pork production in the United States. They literally control more than 80% of it. They've put out over 200,000 meat distributors and packers in the United States have gone out of business because of their conduct. And we have married with that JBS, which is a Brazilian monopoly on the beef industry. And these two companies got together, wrote a bill, slapped a fancy name on it called the Save Our Bacon Act. And then they said everybody should want this. Well, Harvard did a study and they looked at what the Save Our Bacon Act actually does. And what it does is it creates a massive power grab by the federal government to steal power away from the states to individually regulate agriculture. What we're talking about is the literal destruction of 1,000 laws that have been passed by states in the United States from Tennessee to Arkansas to Kentucky and everywhere in between, where citizens have gotten together and said, hey, either maybe we don't want a bunch of hormones in our food, or perhaps we want animals to have regular welfare checks, or perhaps we want farmers to have the ability to package meat locally in our region of the country. And what it does is it takes all of the control of states and allows it to be pulled to the federal government, negating more than 1,000 state laws. Now, the one that they keep dragging out and telling everybody this is really about is something called Prop 12 in California. And they say, you know, they're going to California America if we don't do this, if we don't pass this bill. Well, Prop 12 in California wasn't passed by the legislature. It was written by the voters and passed by the voters. And what it did was it effectively ended the need for excessive hormones and antibiotics in animals before they go to slaughter, because it was allowing them to stand up and move around so that they didn't have to treat bed sores on the animals, right? So Prop 12 was upheld twice at the Supreme Court, but that is one bill that they're holding out. Most of the bills this would actually negate come from all of the Midland states where the agriculture is most prevalent, again, heavy on Tennessee, on Kentucky, on Arkansas, on Oklahoma and Texas. And as a show that's really like had a longstanding perspective of supporting states' rights, this bill is poison. And we know it's poison because the chair of the Agricultural Committee said he's not including it in the text of the farm bill for the Senate. He said he called it a poison pill and said he would not include it. The problem is that Joni Ernst, she's a congresswoman that is retiring this year and has a lot of special job offers and has taken a ton of money from these monopolies. And she says she's going to put it in through amendment. And we thought she had the votes. She still may have the votes. But now that the people have become aware that this was being put in, there has been some outcry and we need more of it. We need to stop it. Because as of 2 days ago, we were still very, very sure that this was going to pass in the Senate bill. Right? And Rep. Luna worked very hard in the House to try to pull it out. She did a great job. We have to finish it now in the Senate. So for everybody out there that's watching at home, you actually have something you can do on this one. You can start calling your senators. You can call your senators and you can say, I don't want this in the farm bill. This doesn't belong in the farm bill. I believe in states' rights. There's a really great creator named Hunter Howell who called this the F Your States' Rights Act. He said it's nothing to do with bacon, right? It's the steady erosion of our states' rights. And he's right. What we're watching right now are international companies buying American federal politicians to try to grab power from the states, consolidate it into the federal government where they have absolute control over the regulatory agencies because of the money they spent. And they want to make sure that American citizens don't have a right to say, I don't want poison in my food. I don't want chemicals in my food. I don't want antibiotics in my food. You know, something that was brought to my attention earlier today is that Brazil allows mRNA and vaccines that have mRNA in all of their beef production. They are the authors of this bill, right? It's a Brazilian monopoly of meat producers and meat packagers that are the authors of this bill with the Chinese Smithfield owners. Right. This is not something that we want. This is not something we should be willing to accept. This is something that we should care about. And when you're looking at it from the outside in, farmers all across America are rising up. They're talking about it. This has a heavy impact on our food supply. And it also really transitions to what Thomas Massey's been fighting for, because this is a big issue for him. Right. Right now, we know in the House Farm Bill, he included the Prime Act. If you're not familiar with the Prime Act is a bill that Thomas Massey had been fighting to pass for five consecutive years. The Prime Act allows local farmers to butcher their own meat and distribute it regionally at local meat packers. They don't have to go to these massive conglomerates. This bill would negate that as well. This bill would wrest that power away so that those small producers could not afford to continue to operate. And with the Prime Act, we get locally grown, locally produced, locally slaughtered, and locally packaged meat, which is in a staunch juxtaposition to what we're currently seeing in the United States, which a lot of people don't recognize. Most people think that if it says, like raised and packaged in the United States, that means that is USA meat. Well, that's because there are a lot of loopholes that allow them to say if it was raised here and then slaughtered and quickly thrown in a container ship where it spent 2 months traveling across the ocean to China to be broken down, butchered, and then repackaged, then it gets put on a ship coming 2 months back across the way, loaded with methane to keep the meat looking pink, right? And then it gets packaged in a small facility here and distributed. That says raised and packaged in the United States, and they leave out the 4 months that it was traveling back and forth overseas loaded with chemicals to keep it looking like it was still fresh meat. We want local produce. We want local control. We want state-level control, and we want voters to have a say. And for every single bit that the federal government is able to wrest away from the states, it's much, much harder for Americans to actually have a say. We have much more control and much more effective ability to push back at the state level. So for everybody watching this broadcast today, that's what I'm going to ask every single one of you to do. You're going to go to call your senator. If you don't know how to do that, at any one of my social channels, it's the top link in my bio where you can find your senator. WhoRepresentsMe.org, I think, also has that for you. And what you're going to do is you're going to say, I do not support including SOBA or the Save Our Bacon Act in the Farm Bill in the Senate or the House. It's as simple as that. This doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be difficult. We get to give ourselves healthy food, and we can circumvent these monopolies that are controlling our legislatures, but also controlling our executive and overall controlling the regulatory agencies that want this control from us. Now, as much as I would love to talk about bacon all day and the Prime Act, because they are some of my favorite topics, I want to pivot to something that is just a little more interesting maybe, which is ice cream. Because yesterday was the first day of summer, day before yesterday was the first day of summer. And one of the biggest articles that sort of went viral today online was talking about the rise of the $8 ice cream cone. Can you guys get me an image of that? I sent it over this morning. It says the rise of the $8 ice cream cone. And it's because there were two viral videos that went very, very viral where a girl went to an ice cream truck and was trying to get two ice creams, and it was going to cost roughly $12 for two ice creams. And she lost her mind and said, who would pay this? Nobody would pay this. Well, actually, if you look at what's happening in the United States right now, everyone is paying that. Now, what's happening is in all of the business articles, they're saying this is a huge problem related to supply chain shocks and rampant inflation and the cost of goods. And there's a little bit of truth to that, perhaps just a tiny bit of truth to that, right? When you look at COVID, we had some pretty serious supply chain shocks. Since then, we've had a heck of a lot of dairy produced in the United States. And because of tariffs, a lot of it stayed here. So I don't think it was a risk of not having the access to dairy here in the U.S. But we are having some problems right now due to the war in Iran, where the Strait of Hormuz closed all of the fertilizer, which is how we grow the food that feeds the cattle and feeds the dairy cows, right? But what they're not saying in this article is really what matters. And that's that, yes, we've had some inflation, we've had some supply chain issues, but what we've actually had is rampant monopolization. We've had rampant monopolization and private equity acquisition in the dairy markets and in specifically the ice cream market. And so what we've seen is the loss of more than 100,000 small mom and pop ice cream shops over the last 10 years. And we've seen companies that are acquiring huge swaths of the ice cream shops in the U.S., rolling them up under private equity roll-ups. Now, we talk a lot about our homes, right? We talk a lot about nursing care facilities. We've talked an awful lot, right, about private equity acquiring the plumbers and the roofers and the HVAC technicians. But can't we just have ice cream? Wouldn't you think we could just have ice cream? Well, the answer is no. We cannot have ice cream. And that's because you have brands like Kahala that acquired all of the Cold Stone brands, right? Rolled it up. Governor Doug Ducey from Arizona put a bunch of shock pricing in there, sued a bunch of their small mom and pop competitors, and then forced pricing through where now you go to Cold Stone and it's a $12.50 cup of ice cream. Quite literally, $12.50. I know I tried to go 3 weeks ago so I could take a look at the pricing, right? And we're seeing right now that we have several brands that had held out for a while, that had not sold out to private equity, that are now on the precipice of selling out, and we're seeing it in real time. And if you look at how many mom and pop shops we've lost in the United States, how much ice cream we've lost in the United States and how it's been rolled up, the ice cream that you know and love, and I'm going to age myself right now, I grew up going to Thrifty and getting 35-cent ice cream cones. I'm not that old. That was actually a common thing at Thrifty ice cream throughout all of the 90s and 2000s. It went up to 99-cent ice cream cones. And then private equity actually bankrupted all of the pharmacies that they were in. And so Thrifty ice cream disappeared. That was actually private equity destruction too, right? So today what we're seeing is the rise of the $8 ice cream cone. And it begs the question, how long are we going to continue to allow things that should not cost what they're costing to cost us more than is reasonable, more than is market competitive, and is in fact just an arbitrary number being set by cartels that get together, work together, and fix prices in the United States? And it would be easy to say, you know, we could just buy ice cream and take it home. I hate to say it, but a quart of ice cream right now, if you go to buy Tillamook, which is a co-op here in the United States, it's $8.99 for a quart of Tillamook right now, right? The ice cream that's still affordable in the grocery store is no longer ice cream. If you go to the grocery store right now, you're going to see it called frozen dairy dessert. And that's because it no longer has the butterfat necessary to legally be called ice cream. That is a regulated term in the United States. And so brands like Turkey Hill and Blue Bunny have been adding oils to supplement in favor of butter. And because they can no longer call them ice cream, in tiny little letters at the bottom of the package, it will say frozen dairy dessert. It is no longer ice cream. So to get ice cream, a lot of times you do have to go to a shop or you have to find the right container at your store. And going to those shops has become increasingly expensive, right? And I think I would be okay paying for $8 for ice cream if it was locally raised and the farmers were making the ice cream. And I do that, right? I do. I go to a place called South Mountain Creamery where I live and Rocky Point Creamery where I live in Western Maryland. And both of those are house-made ice creams, and there I'm paying about $5. It's only when I cross over to the private equity-owned brands that I'm seeing an $8.50 cone of ice cream for my kids. And you wonder how many things at this point are just going to be taken out of reach and what we can do about it. The answer is, I don't know how much we can do. But we're going to talk about a few solutions for your family when we come back in just a few seconds after the break. Again, my name is Tiffany Cianci. I am here for Harrison Smith. They're in unexpectedly today. And you can follow me at The Vino Mom at Tiffany Cianci online. We'll be back right after this break. Thanks so much.
inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its businesses?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there in the way of it. If you look at the number of countries that have had runaway inflation since World War II, you know, in my lifetime, it's very large. Once you create that, it becomes a different world. And of course, you have countries that have gone bankrupt like 6 or 7 times. I mean, it's just amazing what people do. Not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything. And let's be clear, though,
a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed. So here's Prince Charles, the king, announcing the digital change, the mark of the beast system, and a dovetail with Tony Blair, who's globally, through the UN and Bill Gates, standardized the world ID that the UK, under orders of the king, I thought he's just ceremonial, no, he can dissolve parliament anytime he wants, is now going into place. This all ties into everything. We'll talk to the top economist and great patriot, Dr. Kirk Elliott, in a moment about it, but here's the clips.
9 ministers will also proceed with the introduction of digital ID that will modernize how citizens interact with public services.
Tell us a bit about what it means for what government should do in terms of its digital infrastructure, digital ID, data centers, and so on.
The first thing a country needs to do is to unify all of their data so it can be consumed and used by the AI model. You have to take all of your healthcare data, your diagnostic data, your electronic health records, your genomic data. We have to take all of this data we have in our country and move it into a single, if you will, unified data platform.
What they do is Oracle make big donations to Tony Blair's Institute, and Tony Blair's Institute advocates for further advantages for Oracle and Oracle affiliated entities. Listen, the centralization of data and the centralization of power is part of a dark and nefarious agenda.
People are really crazy if they don't call you. You're on record the biggest company because you have the best ratings, the best gold and silver prices. It is the smart move. Get a free consultation. They can roll over financial instruments.
This should be a happy time, right? So don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. There is a path to safety here financially, and that's what tangible assets do. This is what
God
the numbers
always
are
gives
telling
his
us.
People a way out, but the people perish always. For lack of knowledge.
Always. He always does. He's never going to say something, even if it's the mark of the beast. When he talks about it in Revelation, he's not going to say something unless we have a choice to either accept or reject, because he didn't create robots.
KEPM.com/gold. Sign up for the email there to get a free consultation. Call you right back. Or you can call the number 720-605-3000. The smartest investment you could have made in the last 3 years. I'm telling you right now, this is the place to go. 720-605-3000.
Years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
And welcome back, everybody, to War Room Live. I am Tiffany Cianci, and I am filling in today for Harrison Smith. It's always a pleasure to be in studio, but today I'm filming virtually, actually from Texas. So thank you guys for having me on. Thank you guys for letting me, for indulging me in filling in for Harrison, because I know he is much beloved. Just before the break, we were talking about the fact that ice cream, summer favorite, right, a staple, all the kids are out of school, has gone up in price to what many of us considered an impossible number just a few years ago. And when you go out and you're trying to treat your kids, it probably feels like
the wallet is pinching. The wallet's not just pinching. Prices have doubled over the last 6 years for an ice cream cone in the United States, with the average in the United States now for a name brand ice cream cone around $8. $8. Now, I have three children. Just a few years ago, I could take my kids for kids cones, and they were $1.50 each. But what we've seen is this consummate strategy of Kahala Brands, Roark Capital. We've seen a flurry of big private equity firms rolling up ice cream shops and consolidating the pricing structure, working together like a cartel that they are, and the FTC refusing to step in and regulate these fixed priced schemes. And we're seeing the fixed price schemes happening more and more because our FTC right now is missing several of its chair people. And without the chair people, right, without the chairs of the FTC, we don't have enough lawyers to do anything. And so they're not enforcing any trust laws. And that means that private equity can do what private equity always does, which is exploit the American people. And that means your wallet. So this summer, I'm going to challenge all of you. There are a few things you can do, right, to try and make it a little better for yourselves. If you're in a part of the country that has agriculture, there are several states in the U.S. that actually have ice cream, like tours you can find through your local dairy alliances, where you can find farms that are still making fresh ice cream and serving them up. Again, my favorite places in Maryland are Rocky Point Creamery and Rocky Mountain Creamery. Those are like two of them. That's in Maryland, but you can get those in Virginia. You can get them in Maryland. You can get it in Pennsylvania. You can even get it in West Virginia. Nightingale is a local family-owned producer of ice cream that distributes in about 50% of the United States. That has amazing ice cream sandwiches that are exactly the same in their stores as they are in the grocery stores where you can get them, and they're about $4, right? You also have the option of going to family-owned brands like Jenny Splendid. Now, Jenny Splendid has not sold out to private equity. They are still owned by Jenny. She is still distributing in most of the United States. And at least if you're giving your money, you're giving it to cows that are happy and farmers that are making the money that they're actually supposed to for their dairy, instead of these private equity owned brands that are literally just pinching and twisting the knife for your families at a time where they know families are craving this and kids are asking for this and they're at home and parents are probably going to give in. You can make better choices for your family. You can make better choices for your community, and you can support small businesses and farmers in your community if you're given the option. And you can also go to your stores and support co-ops, right? What we're seeing right now, as I mentioned before the break, is that most ice cream in the United States is not ice cream anymore. It's now called frozen dairy dessert because it doesn't have the butterfat necessary to be required, like to be legally required to be called ice cream. And so instead, what you're going to see is frozen dairy dessert in teeny tiny letters at the bottom of the label in places like Blue Bunny and Turkey Hill. Well, if you look at ice cream, there are some co-ops that are releasing ice cream. Tillamook is the most famous. That is a cooperative of farmers from all across the Western United States where the farmers actually make the money from that ice cream. So if you're going to pay more for a premium product, I'd rather it was going to the farmers. You can make that choice too for your home and your family and get a little bit more for your money. Now we're going to pivot to something that is a little more black pill oriented. I know we had some solutions here, but we're going to turn our attention to a video by Larry Fink, the founder of BlackRock, who has just told all of us that we don't have to worry about the SpaceX IPO or Anthropic or OpenAI, because they're not going to be paying for all these data centers they owe $3 trillion to build out right now. Nay, nay, it's going to be your retirement account and your 401k that build it out. And he's going to fill us in right now. I think.
Two foreign monopolies are buying American politicians to control America.
So if you guys heard about like the Save Our Bacon Act, right? And the Farm Bill, seen some videos talking about it, but honestly, I hadn't dug into it. And I had somebody reach out and actually explain it to me. And it is really, really bad. The Save Our Bacon Act, right? This actually passed the House already as part of the Farm Bill. It would basically override all state animal safety and food safety laws, as well as consumer protection laws. Harvard Law looked into this and they identified up to 1,000 different state laws that could be wiped out. It preempts state laws and goes to
perfect.
Only the federal
out of
law,
it. Which great. All right, everybody, they're working on some technical difficulties. Again, I was not supposed to be hosting. I was supposed to be a guest today and I am filling in. So I apologize. The green room, I'm sure, is fixing that. I'm going to give you a little precursor to what's going on. So right now, a lot of you have seen big news about the SpaceX IPO. Everyone's talking about SpaceX getting a $2.5 trillion valuation. They were seeking a $1.7 trillion valuation. And everybody's asking, like, is it worth it? Should I get in? Do I want to miss out on this? SpaceX fell 10% yesterday, by the way, right? So that should tell you a little something. But what we do know about SpaceX, we know about Anthropic, what we know about OpenAI are all racing to IPO. And each one of them is seeking a $1 to $2 trillion valuation. These are the highest valuations in American history ever awarded to anybody going to IPO. And a lot of people think, is this just a random number? Does their earnings potential actually justify it? The answer is no. Their earnings potential absolutely does not justify it. When you look at SpaceX, for instance, what you're going to see is a company that made all of $18 billion last year and lost $4.9 billion. They spent $4.9 billion more than the $18 billion they collected. They've never made a dollar. They have never generated a profit or a return for anybody. And they got awarded a $1.75 trillion IPO. Why? What do they have on the horizon that's guaranteeing they're going to make that? Well, SpaceX is leaning very, very heavily on government contracts. They say, we're going to be the ones taking people back and forth to space. We have that guarantee. We'll make money eventually. Trust me, bro. And the reality is that this has everything to do with one of the other issues that I've been talking about on this show every time I come on, which is how your 401ks are about to be rated by the largest corporations, private equity companies, and private credit firms in the United States. And these IPOs are central to that strip mining, that rating. And what we're going to see right now is that these IPOs are being given high valuations at a time when President Trump issued an executive order called the Democratizing Access to Alternative Investments order in October. I think it was October 16th of last year, roughly thereabouts, where he said that he was going to give regular everyday Americans access to the alternative investment mechanisms and the big billionaire strategies that billionaires were using already. And we should all be very, very grateful. At the very bottom of that letter, he said he was calling on the SEC and the Department of Labor to make that possible for all of us. Well, we've talked a lot about the Department of Labor. You guys have helped me to put comments in to stop the Department of Labor from giving immunity to fund managers to badly invest your money in private equity. But on the flip side of that exact same executive order, we have what we're looking at right now, which is the SEC passed a new rule like May 26th. And that new rule makes it so if you are given a trillion plus valuation at your IPO, you are given immediate access to the index funds. Now, what does that mean? For some of you, it might not mean anything. I never have heard that before. For anybody that has a 401k, there is a chance that index funds have a heck of a lot to do with your future. Okay? If you're investing money, those index funds are very, very important to you. And statistically and historically, index funds, post 2001, your company, once taken to IPO, had to prove for 12 consecutive months that it could generate returns for their investors before they could be included in index funds. Why? Because index funds are designed to alleviate risk. It's to make sure that if you give $100 to your 401k, that it's spread across the 99 companies. So if any one of those companies tanks, the rest of it is floated up to hold your investments in a safe way. Right now, we've had two consecutive years where all of the gains made by the stock market, all of them, literally every penny, were tied up in data centers and these three companies and the Magnificent Seven. After these three IPOs, they'll be called the Magnificent 10. And as a result, having them go straight to index fund would force every investor in America that has a 401k or an investment account that is managed, even an insurance that's an annuity, right? They're going to be automatically forced to buy these IPOs. Why? Because post-dot-com bubble in 1999, hundreds of thousands of Americans lost their retirements. They lost their retirements because companies in the dot-com bubble were allowed access into the index funds. And when the dot-com bubble burst, all of those index funds lost everything and people lost their entire investment accounts. Pensions lost all of their investments. Investments through insurance companies and hedge funds lost major investments through indexes. These are meant to be moderate to low risk. They're not meant to be high risk. And so for the last 25 years, anytime a company wanted to be included in those index funds, which everyone is required to purchase, right? You're not required, but if you're in a fund that is managed in a way that is designed for a target end date, it is automatically invested in these index funds, like the Vanguard fund. Okay. Vanguard has two flagship investment index funds. And there's a very good chance your retirement is in those funds. Well, for the last 25 years, to be included in that fund as an investment, you had to prove for 12 months you could return a profit a profit, a return, a dividend to your investors for 12 consecutive months, and then you could apply for access to the index funds. Well, in that same executive order that Trump wrote back in October, what he ended up doing was he said, I'm calling on the SEC and the Department of Labor. And the SEC did exactly what he asked for. The SEC passed a new rule in May that says when you get a high valuation, not only do you get immediate access to the index funds, but they're also changing the rules that require proof of what's called a public float minimum to access those index funds, because that was also passed after the dot-com bubble. Now, if you don't know what a public float is, that means that there is enough of your stock available to the public to buy that your insider investors couldn't artificially manipulate the fund. Okay? And what they did here was they actually gave a break on that too. And they reduced it from like a 13% minimum available to the public to 5%, which means that these companies can literally come in, get this high valuation they do not deserve because they do not have a profitability strategy that makes any sense for these valuations. They can force your 401k to immediately start buying in an index fund, and they only have to make 5% available to the public to buy, which means they could have pre-sold 95% of the stock at discount prices to their billionaire insiders that are now going to sell at the top where you're buying. Now, statistically, when you buy at an IPO, you're going to see 17 to 21% losses over the next year and a half. That is statistically true over the last 15 years. So for all of us being forced through our index funds to buy into this IPO, this SpaceX IPO, there is a very high likelihood we will lose 20% of that investment over the next year and a half. Now imagine that every retirement account in the United States has to buy it, right? And we're just pushing that stock up by artificially being forced into that purchase. And suddenly there's a ton of money and value available to borrow against to build these data centers. And that is why Larry Fink came out and very boldly, with no qualms at all, said it's really worried about these investments because these companies aren't actually going to pay for these data centers. The everyday Americans are. They're going to pay for these data centers, the data centers they don't want, the data centers that they're picketing outside the meetings of, the data centers that are launching referendums all across the United States. The American people are going to pay for these data centers. That's what's going to happen. I'm going to ask real quick, do we have that video available? If we do, could you play it? And if not, oh, there it is.
Americans to think about growing with the United States. We will have far than enough money to invest in this infrastructure. But as the governor was talking about, the need for electrons is growing every day. Some of these, you know, if we're going to be the leader in technology, which we are, if we are going to be the leader in AI, which we presently are, it's just going to require trillions of dollars of investments. And if we don't invest in it, China will be the global leader in this. And so to me, it's not whether. This is a must. And if you think about how that translates, it translates into a more dynamic economy. We need the United States economy to grow at over 2%. We need the U.S. economy to grow at 3%, especially with the growing deficits the federal government has. And so much of this money, not just the projects, is going to be coming from the private sector, from savings accounts, from pension accounts, from insurance companies, and on and on and on. The whole world is in need of improving the infrastructure.
You know, he goes on to say, and the whole world's in need of improving the infrastructure. Infrastructure is good for the economy. And we don't really have any concerns about these investments because these investments aren't going to be paying for what they're actually obligated to the American people will. And, you know, when the billionaires say the quiet part out loud, you should listen. You should always listen to them. And so we've seen with SpaceX right now the very first glimpse of what's about to happen. But next to IPO are Anthropic and OpenAI. OpenAI, they're seeking a $2.5 trillion IPO, as is Anthropic. Their entire business model at this point is war, right? The only thing that they have to offer right now is that we're going to get government contracts so you can trust me, bro, we'll make money eventually. But when you look at the value of these companies, when you look at what this means, right, when you look at the valuations, Anthropic right now is selling a service for $100 a month to the American people. A lot of businesses are doing it. A lot of people are doing it. You rent access to their LLMs. And so you get access to Claude, Claude Code, whatever you're using, right? You get access to. And in doing so, you are getting $16,000 worth of compute. That's the average. You can spend $100 with Anthropic right now to get is $16,000 worth of compute because they need us addicted. They're getting us addicted to using it. And then at a certain point, all of those subsidies have to turn off and we're going to start paying for those tokens. And when we do, I don't think the American people are going to keep paying $100 a month for the amount of compute they're actually going to get. And they're certainly not going to be paying $16,000 a month for the true value of that compute, right? So what we're seeing here is this fictitious, candy-coated, artificial world that is being built for us by these AI companies that want us addicted, want us needed. And Sam Altman came out and said the quiet part out loud. He said, and I'm going to roughly quote here, I see the future of intelligence as a service that you rent access to like a utility where we turn on the meter. And if you want access to intelligence, you rent it from us. We run the meter and that's how we make our money. They need us docile, uneducated, ignorant, right? They need our children uneducated so that we have to rent access to the intelligence they stole, right? These companies stole the intelligence. They scraped copyrights that belong to other people, right? They stole books that were written that had licensing that they never paid for. They stole magazines, movies, Disney characters, and they train these models on stolen intellectual property and our intelligence, which is what makes our data so valuable. We have some of the most valuable thing on earth right now is data, right? It's worth more than minerals. It's worth more than blood. It's worth more than printer ink, if you can believe it, right? And so we have these tech bros that are desperately racing to IPO, one, because it's becoming clear that they don't have a profit model, right? OpenAI had made a movie generator. They said everybody was going to pay for access to it. Flopped in under 6 months, and Sora has now been shuttered. The app is no longer available. You can't use it anymore, right? And now they're saying, well, don't worry, we'll get government contracts. Well, the only way that that works is if these billionaires keep us at war forever. We were promised no new forever wars. That has certainly gotten farther out of reach for all of us. We all know that through the war in Iran. We've seen how it's impacting everything. But if their profit model is war and we don't want war, then why would we think it's a safe investment to invest in a company where that's the only profit opportunity they have right now? Right? If you look around the world, and a lot of people don't like when I use China as an example, but they're the closest competitor we have in AI. So I'm going to use China as an example real quick. China is not allowing 3 to 4 companies to dominate their AI development. They're not. Instead, what they've done is turned up to every developer in China, hundreds of thousands of them, and they have them all competing to make the best products through open source competition, which is what competition is designed to do, by the way, right? And they assume that when there are good products that are established, that cream will rise to the top, and that is what will be elevated in their economy. Now, if you juxtapose that with us, we have 4 tech billionaires that have said, give us all your data, and we promise one of us will come up with the golden goose. One of us will come up with the thing that's valuable. We don't know which one, and we can't promise how it's going to happen, and we don't know what it's going to look like. But one of us will figure it out. Again, trust me, bro. And by the way, we need 6,000 data centers to do it. That's a little bit of an exaggeration. We're currently building 5,581 in the United States, all of them unnecessary unless you were surveilling every American 24/7 around the clock, right? That's what you would need that much data center capacity for. These are highly speculative. They don't have customers for them. They're buying up water rights and land rights. And I think that's really important to say, right? They're saying this is for data centers we have to have. Well, the whole of China, which actually has the infrastructure grid to support it without building all new power lines like we're having to do, they only have 550. That's all they're building, 550. Why do we need 10 times as many data centers? No one can really answer that question. And the more that I look into it, the more I think it's about the water and the land. I really do, right? We could not use that much capacity given every prediction model that we have available. But we do have a bunch of real estate speculators that are out here trying to gobble up as much land and water as possible. We do see that in real time with no way to pay for it because every data center is being put on a 20 to 30 year payback in the way that they're discussing it in their profit and loss statements. But every single chip in that data center has to be replaced every 2 to 3 years. No one's even talking about those costs. That's not even being factored in yet, right? So we're talking about why these IPOs are destined to be really painful and how they're going to use them to leverage our 401ks. Well, Anthropic is next and OpenAI. And right now, OpenAI has just had to scale back all of their predictions for what they were going to do with curing cancer and taking over schools. All of that's changed now. And they say AI is not going to replace jobs anymore. They have to say that. Why do they have to say that? Because if we don't have jobs, we can't buy their product, right? They, someone went to an Econ 101 class and figured that out in the last few weeks. So they've changed their dialogue on that issue. But simultaneously, they're seeking an IPO because they are committed to trillions of dollars in data centers that they have agreed to buy that they have no way to pay for. And an IPO will get them access to our money. Now, how much money do they need? Well, private equity needs $12 trillion. The data centers need about $3 trillion. Quick, ask me how much money is available in the 401k market right now. $14.8 trillion. Thank you for asking. So we know $12 trillion is needed by private equity and private credit. We need about $3 trillion available for the data centers. And we have $14.8 trillion available in the 401k market. What could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? And so as you guys are thinking about whether or not you want to buy, right? I can't give you investment advice. I can't do that. But as you're thinking about it, I want you to understand that there is a strategy here that required an executive order from the president that was paid for by the crypto and private equity lobby and by the AI lobbies. They fought hard for these executive orders, right? They donated hundreds of millions of dollars over the last election cycles and a whole bunch of money to a ballroom, right? To get these executive orders written. And now that they're written, we have two agencies that are changing every rule that was meant to protect every working class American that has existed for the last 25 years, since the last time the working class Americans were the cost of diversifying and socializing the risk of reckless corporate greed. And they've just turned off the switches that were put in place to protect us for no reason at all, except that they were asked to by billionaires because they always share the wealth, right? And now we have data centers that none of us want, that are not necessary, that we do not need, that are not the future of compute, by the way. And for those of you that don't know, I actually have a day job. I work in AI. I know a heck of a lot about this topic. This isn't, they are not necessary, right? These are not necessary. The future of AI is going to be decentralized, and so is the future of compute. And that's why every other country in the world is not building 6,000 data centers. That's just us, right? But it's also the only thing propping up our stock market. The data center buildouts, if you look at their GDP spend and the GDP growth we've had over the last 2 years, they're almost identical. 3.8%, 3.8%. Every dollar spent on data centers and build out in AI is dollar for dollar exactly our GDP growth. Otherwise, we'd have a net negative, which has not happened in decades, right? So what can you guys do? Well, let's talk about it. You guys, if you were trying to find a way to not buy these index funds that these IPOs are going to be forced into, you could call your fund manager at your 401k because you can self-manage and self-direct and tell them that until these IPOs have settled, you want your money pulled back from new investment in these index funds. You could say that, right? You can absolutely call your fund manager and give them specific companies you're not allowing. Because these companies are the exact same companies. These index funds are the exact same funds that right now are cutting off billionaires from withdrawing their money because the bottom is falling out in their private credit markets, right? You can protect yourself. You don't have to give your money to bail out these billionaires. You do not have to forfeit your 401ks, but you do have to take action. You do have to take part. You do have to speak out. And you also should be contacting, in my opinion, your state attorney generals to protect you because the federal government is not protecting anyone on this issue right now. State attorney generals, they might be able to help. So that's another way that you can try and take part, another way that you can try and make a difference. But you need to contact your fund managers. You need to explain to them your concerns. You need to say, I do not give you permission to invest in private equity. I do not give you permission to invest in alternative investments and private credit. I absolutely do not give you permission to invest my money in these early IPOs. I need them to settle. Now, for those of you that tuned in and wondered where Harrison is, he was out very unexpectedly sick in the last hour today. I am filling in on very short notice for all of you that tolerated me being here instead of him. Thank you so much. If you'd like to follow me, you can follow me at Tiffany Cianci on TikTok and YouTube and at The Vino Mom on X and Instagram. Don't forget to call your senators and say no to SOBA. Have a great day, everyone.
Hi, folks. Doc Bigley here. And today we're going to get to know our H2O. Billy, what kind of water do you drink?
Why, tap water, of course. Ma says it keeps my teeth sparkly white.
I'm sorry to say it, Billy, but your mother is either plain ignorant or worse, a communist. Let me explain.
Tap water used to be safe to drink, but communist subversives in our government
introduced fluoride into our nation's tap under the guise of dental health, when in reality, fluoride lowers your IQ, calcifies your pineal gland, and makes you susceptible to anti-capitalist mind viruses.
So you're telling me I'm a sap if I drink tap?
Yes, you are, Billy. Yes, you are. But don't despair. We've found a solution. Follow me. I'd like to tell you a tale of two frogs.
Frog number one has only ever drank unfiltered tap water, chock full of fluoride. Observe him listening to satanic music, abusing substances, and engaging in other perversions.
Look, Doc, they're trying to play leapfrog. They're pretty bad at it, though.
Avert your eyes, Billy. Let's continue.
Meanwhile, frog number two has only ever drank water that has been filtered for fluoride and other impurities. What a happy frog family.
Spill the secret, Doc. How do you get rid of the communist poisons?
With the new water filter system from the AlexJonesStore.com.
Say, Doc, may I have a glass?
Why, certainly. Well, that's just swell. No water in the water filter. Listen, I'm not mad at the crew, but I asked for real water in here 30 minutes ago and never got it.
Crew's in trouble again.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.